on this committee, we have to do certain things. But we don't have like a decision-making power on when we do it and how we do it. So it comes to this, that the head of the PBO, Parliamentary Budget Office, apparently, I'm not very clear about this, the Parliamentary Budget Office head, his term lapses, I think, shortly. And in terms of the rules and so on, and Parliament Speaker's office, but it's both Parliament and the SPOP's office, the chairperson, come to the conclusion on basis of legal advice that the House, both Houses, have to extend his term. It cannot be done by the Speaker. They have to extend his term, and they're proposing that the term be extended to 3 months beyond the election. And in terms of legal advice we've got, that is perfectly tenable because he hasn't served a full 5-year term, something like that. But Mr. Cedric de Frolic, Mr. Charles de Beer is dealing with a matter on behalf of three committees, appropriations, finance, and the NCOP side. So a proposal has come about that Alan was meant to have sent out to you, but you don't leave. I don't know whether he's done that. There's a proposal to have a meeting at 13:30 tomorrow as a first tranche of the discussion. We will get a brief. But we will have to vote on it in the House before we arrive. I think the deadline for the adoption by the two Houses is the 3rd of June. So in short, we got this notice on Friday afternoon. Mr. De Beer has tried to pull the three chairs together. We are asking to meet with the opposition parties this afternoon on stage, but I'm just alerting you there's a proposed meeting for 13:30 tomorrow. Exactly what the issues are, the lawyers, Frank Jenkins and whoever else, and Mr. De Beer will take us through that. Having said that, you got the agenda last night. It's at 13:30 tomorrow. I'm just saying Mr. De Beer is handling the matter. But we will talk with the opposition members this afternoon. We will discuss with them what time, or maybe after the House rises, we will engage with them to see whether we can arrive at consensus. I'm merely doing this on behalf of the Speaker's office and Mr. De Beer. The next thing to say very quickly is we had a meeting yesterday where the Minister had presented us a letter. I hope tomorrow you've distributed copies of the letter, Minister, just so people are aware. Has the letter been distributed? The one we had yesterday. The letter that's relevant to today's meeting is going to be distributed. Yeah. Okay, so you've got copies of the letter. We looked at it yesterday, and the DA no less said that they agree that in view of the disciplinary inquiry into Commissioner Moyane's conduct and in view of the pending commission, we will not be able to fully engage with the issues on the agenda. Because people have a fair, what the lawyers say is Frank here. Oh my, Frank's not here. We have a right of reply. What a right to a fair trial or a fair process of investigation. So in view of that, we will have to manage without a lawyer. I'm not sure. Can you just say where Frank is? We need him here because he has to guide us on the legal parameters of what we do here. But yesterday the committee agreed to take into account. The one matter that the Minister raised that I when I was reflecting further when I looked at the letter last night that I think is not relevant to us is the process of the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. They're not a statutory body. We welcome the investigation into the matter of KPMG, but we're not obliged to take their process into account in what we do here. But yes, Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors is right. Now, within those constraints, I've had an exchange with the Commissioner. We feel that Frank. We feel that you must answer questions, and Frank will guide us in that regard. Now, the program says that Treasury will give us an overview. Unfortunately, they're not here. No, but we can't wait for them. This committee, we don't wait for the chairperson either. The rule is 3 minutes after the time, somebody else has to chair. So no, we can't wait for him, and he knows that. I'll go over to you, Commissioner, on the first matter on the agenda. Have copies of the agenda been distributed? Alan's not here, so you can imagine the challenges, but that's another story. The agenda was distributed by email last night. Can Can we just take it as accepted? Okay, thank you. Right, so the first item on the agenda. Right, can you go first?
Thank you, Chair, and if I may just, for a start, just introduce my team with me. Is that in order? Okay.
Opportunity, as we've done in this committee, to welcome your appointment, to wish you well in very challenging circumstances, and to plead that you and your team must abide by the law or resign. Okay? Thank you.
Chair, it is my intention always to do the right thing and fully within the framework of the law to operate the business at SARS. I think just to my left, I've got the Acting Chief Financial Officer, Johnston Makuba. He'll be dealing with revenue results for the previous financial year, as you've requested. To my right, I have got the Chief Officer of Enforcement, Ms. Makola Makola. Then I have the Acting Chief Officer of Business and Individual Tax, Mr. Fabian Murray. Behind me, I have Ms. Makungu Matabula, who is the Group Executive responsible for Corporate Legal. In her office as well is Alawani Sagama, and accompanied also from the legal team is Wayne Broughton. That is our team that is here today and to deal with the various matters that are before us. Chair, if I may kick off, and as you alluded to the Minister indicating that we cannot get into the details necessarily if we can get to the matter of Mr. Jonas Makwakwa, to get to the aspects that may in any way compromise the process of the disciplinary hearing that is underway currently and the Commission of Inquiry that will be following. We understand shortly that it will be in the next while that the President will be promulgating the terms of reference for that committee. But I do want to inform the committee in the process. I have been doing a lot of evaluation in terms of the work that has been done over the last while in respect of Mr. Makwakwa's matter. And in respect of the matter, I want to kick off, if I may, Chair, just to tell you what should happen in such matters. Because for me, that is the critical starting point. What happens in any matter when the FIC identifies that there's risk of money laundering? And that is done in terms of Section 40 of the FIC Act. And that is given to us in our mandate as the tax commissioner, the tax man, not with my hat as the employer, the starting point. So the very important issue at that point in time, in receiving a Section 40, the information from the FIC, which alludes to whatever it might be, it is to me to ensure that there is tax compliance. In such matters, we go into a process whereby we evaluate the risk that has been identified. And I'm speaking in theory, Chair. That risk would then give rise. So if we get a report and I'm evaluating it, some of the reports, and we'll be giving a further information a bit later of FIC reports, it may result in no case being created. It might result in a case. We may see there's risk. We may not see there's risk. The Commissioner's mandate does not extend to investigate money laundering. It is tax evasion I've got to investigate. And that is my mandate. So once the case has been selected by our case selection team, and Mr. Murray was in his real role, not in his acting role, Chair, is the group executive responsible for case selection, that select the cases either for what we call compliance audit, which is a review, investigative audit, which is a more detailed process, and there's various forms of investigative audit, or what we term a criminal investigation. Once that is done, they create a case in the process that a case is put on the system for an auditor to evaluate, and they start the work, and they would get information, and they would go about evaluating has proper tax declarations taken place. That is in a perfect world. If I may just deal with what happens if it's a SARS employee. If it's a SARS employee, the same process happens. The only difference is for senior employees, as for members of parliament and that, they are dealt with within the VIP unit or the restricted taxpayer unit, but the same process follows There's no fear or favour in terms of the case selection process for our staff or, if I may say, for the members of Parliament. We do the same process of case selection. So if we get a Section 40 for a staff member, we would have started an audit for the case, and that could lead to a result. Mr. Chair, the challenge that we have in law is the bridge between SARS, the taxman, and SARS, the employer. There is a fence between the two that we need to understand in law. We have to honour the rights of a taxpayer up to a point. On the other side, if a taxman's employee is involved in tax evasion, that is a very serious offence, and we must take action. Now, in 2010, we took legal opinion from senior counsel that said there is a case to be made. Once tax evasion is proved, not perceived, proved, then the employer has got a right to discipline. And that's a very important process. So you first look at, when we're dealing with an employee, you first look at the aspects pertaining to the tax, and then you will decide, must I discipline the employee or not? Because just like any taxpayer, he might claim a deduction that he thought he was entitled to. You wouldn't want SARS as the employer to discipline its staff when it's a trivial matter. But when it comes to tax evasion, Mr. Chair, you asked us that we just abide by the law. It's serious. Our staff must be compliant. In fact, if I may say, and I know I'm only in an acting position, I think a time has come that as senior employees, we need our tax affairs to be more transparent. We cannot continue to operate in an environment that everything is confidential. Yes, it must be protected because I've got privacy rights, but we need to be able to operate in a far more transparent thing. I shouldn't be able to hide behind the secrecy thing, but I am sitting with the law as I have it today, and that law protects my employees' tax affairs. And I need the committee to be aware of that. If I may just deal with this case, and I don't want to get into the particulars. With hindsight, looking at it, the South African Revenue Service went about it the incorrect way. We should have started the process with a tax investigation. And I will not divulge the details of the tax investigation. Thereafter, we should have gone to the process of determining whether there's any case to be made with dealing with the employee in question. That compromises the whole process, and I think that Hogan Lowells will be talking to this and a bit later, but they were appointed by our HR department. I think it's common cause that they were appointed by our HR department. That is the incorrect process to start with that. To appoint a firm to look at the HR angle before I've looked at the tax angle. It's an important aspect. And for me, it is the crux of this case. And I don't want to go into the more details, but there's many other aspects. I don't want to go into the FIC and the handling of the FIC report, which has got its own complexities because of the disciplinary. I cannot comment further at this point in time. But, Chair, that is my submission as we have it today. What I can assure the committee, without fear and favour, we apply the law under my watch, and we will do that properly. My exco, we are committed to that. I made it very clear. We will do what's right in all circumstances, because then we can hold our heads up high and we can collect ultimately the revenue that our fiscus is so desperately needing.
Thank you. Questions, comments, contributions? We have Mr. Mania and Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I wonder, you've conceded that in this matter, and I quote you, you went about it in the wrong way. My question, and that Hogan Lovells was, in your view, incorrectly appointed, and that there was, by the HR department, and ultimately SARS went about this the wrong way. You mentioned your exco, has anybody been fired, held accountable in SARS for this matter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to SARS for being here today. It's great to see the team. Commissioner, the question, and you'll have to guide us about how close to the line I'm asking the question, is from the interesting about your explanation, because if you wish, you can have a look at my notes, and my notes centered on the tax side of things. And so I don't want to know the details of the tax, but has now that tax investigation been done? And has it included the so-called donors to Mr. Makwakwa? I don't know how, Mr. Chairman, how close I'm going to asking the wrong questions here.
What you want, it's your right to ask it, and then Frank and Mark will assist. Mark's not a lawyer. Have you got a lawyer here from SARS?
Yes.
Okay, the lawyer from SARS and a lawyer. Sorry, who?
Four.
Four. Fine. Well, who's like the senior most lawyer? Who's like the senior most lawyer? Yes, indeed. But what I mean is, like, a person who deals with the rights of, it's not about tax issues, it's about the rights of people to a fair hearing and so on. Tandy, you're more polished and more experience, quite frankly, having been here for 5,000 years, than they are. Right? They are tax experts. So having said that, I think you get that drift. We're not going to ask, look, is there some person who's the senior most person here? That person will respond initially and then bring in people, right? Ask what you want.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's nice to see Momo here. I'm sorry he's having to squeeze up on a three bench there, but the question really is, has the tax investigation been done, and does it include people like the donation, the purported donation, although PwC were not able to confirm the donation from Zimbabwe, and did it include the 450,000 cash deposits into Elski's account, and those kind of, you know, third party, what I'm trying to illustrate is not just Makwakwa, where the third parties that were named in the PwC and Hogan Lovins report, where their tax affairs also investigated. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nati.
Thank you. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. HR versus the tax approach investigation. And I'm just posing this, of course, it's not necessarily a question, but more of a comment, and perhaps I also do want to solicit your thinking on this one. Earlier on, you had alluded to the divide between SARS being a taxman and SARS being an employer. And I do think that's where your answer lies when you deal with this particular question, because I wouldn't have thought that human resources management was wrong, for an example, in its approach, precisely because it was dealing with an employee in this particular instance and so on. So don't you think that's exactly where the issue lies, in a sense, as opposed to, oh, well, what you should have done is just merely a tax investigation approach as opposed to an HR approach. Now, from an institutional point of view, I think HR was correct in then saying this employee is reported to have transgressed, and therefore these are the steps that we are instituting to investigate this particular matter. So I just wanted to throw that one in. Thanks, Chair.
Chair. Complexities of the matter, and the complexities lie between the role of SARS as an institution that collects the tax, and the role of SARS in investigating an official proceeding. places to search. You can investigate tax evasion. Money laundering is the competence of other institutions. Because the FIC takes a report and gives it to investigating officers if they detect there's been money laundering. That's how we do it. In terms of the procedure. But this old computer you put into the
No, because you've got a big computer
now
staying
out there. Yeah, I need to don't get involved with somebody between me and you. Don't get involved. So you see that distinction should be made at all times, so that we understand what can be investigated within the parameters of SARS. At least you are found wanting in litigation, and it's based on what I raised when we in V226 about the secrecy laws we have in South Africa that might at some point needs to be reviewed. Well, review in law. My son says it means something else. I must stop saying review. Review means something in law. So for lawyers, don't take it literally. Review in a layman terms, it means it needs to be relooked at. So we need to apply our mind. I once dealt with a case that was discussed internally. Once you discuss a case that needs to be investigated internally, you are blurring the lines, especially if is discussed by people who might be witnesses at some point. So we need to understand that from the onset and explain it and know what we can deal with here today and what can be dealt with differently based on the scope and the mandate of a commission that will come into place to deal with the finer details of the matter. Because once you get to a space that can't be dealt with at this level, then the subsequent result is going to be litigation. So I want us not to take an approach, Chair, that says who was right, who was wrong, but to identify where the mistake was that took shape and needs to be corrected in the immediate so that you clean the system from biasness of any sort or perceived biasness of some sort. Moving forward. Thanks.
Okay, any other comments?
No. Okay, fine. Marcus?
You know, there are people who say, so this is the acting commission. People who said that you don't have qualifications on anything and that you just jumped over people who have qualifications. Do you have any qualification on anything, post-secondary qualification or even secondary qualification? Thank you.
Okay, over to you,
Mark. Okay. Yes, let me deal with the first question. And there were some parliamentary questions relating to my qualification, that I didn't have a matric. It was something going around Twitter. I've got a Bachelor of Administration from UNISA, and I do have a matric from Clapham High School in Pretoria, for the record. I've been at SARS for 34 years, and I think those that know me, I'm a taxman at heart. I've worked through most of the organization. That being said... Chair, with regards to the member's question with regards to being held accountable, that is work in process, and I think it would be inappropriate at this point, given where we are, what the Chair said earlier with regards to the current processes that are underway to go further. I am, obviously, if people did wrong, we will hold them to account, and I want to assure you of that. At this point, nobody has been disciplined or anything with regards to this process within SARS as we sit here today. But I'm very aware that if wrongdoing is found, we will do it. We'll set it right. my modus operandi is very much that we look, hold people to account, but on the other side we keep look after our staff and ensure that our staff are protected, because that is something that's very worrisome to me, which it will come out maybe later in the day as we engage. With regards to the investigation which the member raised, what are we doing? I can't go into that, Chair. It would be in total breach for me to do that. But I know that some people might doubt my integrity being here today. I can assure you I will do what is right with regards to any investigation without fear and favor. What one does need to, and before somebody says, well, are you investigating A, B, and C and other things that are out there, SARS has to prioritize all its resources. And I just want us as to understand that. So we don't investigate every complaint we get. We get thousands upon thousands of complaints. We don't investigate every complaint. But I want to assure you, on this matter and other matters that are out there, we will do what is right to ensure that the fisc is not done in and that criminals are held to account. I cannot go beyond that at this point in time. With regards to the differentiation, Chair, with regards to HR, the employer, and the tax man, it's an ongoing struggle we have, Chair, and one of the key things and one of the recommendations we still need to implement is in our conditions of employment that we hold that if staff are found to be doing tax in a manner that detracts, in other words, is illegal, that they must be held to discipline. In our staff code today, we hold people that they've got to be tax compliant. My challenge, and as I think the member, Mr. Lees, knows, tax compliance looks at return filing and payment of debt. That is not true compliance. I believe that we need compliance beyond that. That means I'm declaring all my income, and I'm reflecting that correctly. And if not, I believe that a SARS employee should be held to account in that regard. And I want to implement that. It hasn't been. It is a recommendation that we want to do. And it will require, obviously, engagement with our staff, but that compliance be a mandate for being an employee at SARS. It just makes sense. How can it be otherwise, Chair? In terms of the comments made further, I don't think there was any question in that. I note them. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir. Were you? Yeah, no, we'll come to you. An appropriate time. I'm moving on to the Hogan's Rosal report. Okay, so you're done, right? Right. Now, does anybody else want to say anything about this Makwakwa matter before we look at the Hogan's Rosal report specifically? No. Okay.
We are satisfied with what we have and what we cannot deal with. We are content that we cannot be able to discuss the matter.
Essentially, we are consistent with yesterday's meeting. We cannot preempt the outcomes. But surely we want to say something like this, that this investigation, this disciplinary inquiry into the commissioner should be expedited, should be completed reasonably soon, in a fair and appropriate manner, and that we request both the government and Commissioner Moyane to cooperate to ensure this happens. Can't we take, tomorrow can you note this, right? I'm suggesting we can't just hang in the air. In other words, we should be very careful about saying that there are processes out there, and we shouldn't be inconsistent. In other words, we mustn't jump up and down inconsistently. Based on what this committee has said over the last 4 years, it seems reasonable to me, Tandi, to suggest that we say, while we recognize that at this stage the committee cannot consider the matter fully, we urge that the government, is it correct to say government? The government and
Commissioner Moyane cooperate in the public interest to ensure an expeditious and fair outcome, following which the committee will consider the matter further. So it's not hanging in the air. We must be Parliament. Is that agreeable? Right, so that's more or less the wording, right? I'll draft it out.
Sir, can you please draft it for us so that
we
have the official
draft?
Yeah,
a statement by that committee,
yes.
Not by any political party which claims to speak on behalf of the committee.
Chair, that's why I want us to do
this morning,
it, I want
but
to
I don't want to enter.
So
I'll issue a statement to say that the decisions made yesterday were done by the committee as a whole. The decision done on Marcus Eustace was actually decided first by four committees, not any party and so on. So I'll have to do all of that, but that's my work. But let's move to this. It is a committee decision. I will draft the... Any party is free. Mr. Floyd Chivambo, you can speak on Radio Mongolia and whatever you want on behalf of your party, but the committee's statement is issued by that committee. It's a committee decision moved by Tandi. Is that right? Right. Seconder?
Yeah.
We're going to do it like that now. That will be a committee... Nati, you moved. Seconded, right? Is that correct? Right.
Chair, I want to make a further proposal.
Yeah.
That the statement is issued before the end of this meeting.
Yeah, so that it goes out as a committee thing. We keep having this issue. We have no problems with people speaking on behalf of their committees. I mean, on their parties, but they can't speak on behalf of the committee. Right, can we move on to the second issue, which is the Hogan's Global Report. Now, after a titanic struggle, the committee, no particular party, the committee got that report. Right. Now, we acknowledge that the whole matter of Mr. Makwakwa, we said it before, were it not for the DA. Can I repeat, Nati, since you were not here? It was the DA that raised the issue first in August 2016. We did not know what was... That's correct. The committee can even acknowledge that. You want it? We'll say that. We'll acknowledge the DA raised that matter first. We didn't know what they were talking about and who they were talking about. We know the gentleman they're talking about is sitting right there. Right, so that is correct. That's accurate. But it's the committee that's taken this resolution. Now, on the Hogan's Global Report, the committee decided on that, as mandated to the chair. Now, on that matter, we have the report. It's over to you. Zakhele Shlope was asked to do a summary of it. A million things happened between then, and then the commission was removed or suspended. Zakhele, did you do us an overview? And do you want to just give us a quick overview, of, if you have done so, and then we throw it open to committee members to say what they want?
No, Chair, I remember we talked about this and we said because the report is so short, it's better for members to read the whole report. It was about 14 pages. The report itself is very short. The other things are annexures.
I read this earlier, right?
Yeah.
But I know that Treasury got the report, am I correct, from us? Because the commissioner refused to give it to you. Is that correct, Treasury? Can you explain?
Chair, the Hogan Lovells report was refused to Minister Gordon when he was minister, before he was fired. It was not given to Minister Gigaba, despite many requests. And even when it was promised that Mr. Mayani would give it to you on that Friday, I think just before he was suspended, we waited and waited, but the ministry did not get a copy. So I had to contact you, as you know, just to confirm to get a copy of the report. So that's how we've got a copy, and if it does help the committee, I can just walk you through some issues which might just help the discussion as well.
Perspective of the executive, not parliament.
Yes, yes.
But we're free to engage with it. Yeah.
Yes.
From your perspective as the executive, yes.
Okay, I had some slides if members want that. I thought I'd just... Should I? Who's got the slides? No, it's just sort of just in time production. Yes, yes, it's copies. Yes,
I don't have them. She didn't give them to me.
Yeah. No. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I don't know where Cindy's walked out. Okay, Chen. So let me just very quickly just go through. If you can just go through, I'll go through this very quickly. Who's the jockey pressing button, Johnson? Okay, if you don't mind. Right, Chair. Look, I'm not going to go through all of these. I'm just to make the point that you know, in the State of Nation address, the president talked about taking steps to stabilize and strengthen vital institutions like SARS. This was in February this year, and he certainly understood the point on tax, the importance of tax morality, and he talked about appointing the Commission of Inquiry. Next slide. Minister Kigaba, in his budget speech, also made reference to this announcement, and in fact made several announcements which I've just put up for members to have a look at, including the fact that there were 2 years of shortfalls in revenue. Go on. So I've just also just given a summary of actual documents that are out there so that there's no speculation. The presidency, when Mr. Moyani was suspended on the 19th, had put out a press statement. I've just quoted, so members can have a look what the issues that he raised. He raised the Makwakwa issue. He raised the issue of the handling, particularly of the FIC report, and he raised the issue of VAT refunds, according to the media statement. I think the President also just indicated the importance of SARS, why it needs to be sorted out as quickly as possible, because it does pose a risk to the fiscal framework, and at that time to our credit rating as well. And in terms of the law, it's the Minister of Finance, and Chair, this is an important point to note, that the Commissioner is appointed by the President, and therefore, according to the law or the lawyer's interpretation, can only be dismissed by the President. But this is a complex relationship. The executive authority is the Minister of Finance, and of course the employer is SARS. Okay, so you've got three different parties, and you need to be a genius to figure out what applies when. So that's why Mark Kingdon was appointed by the Minister of Finance. Go on. Of course, it did happen that day there was an acting Minister of Finance, but it's the Minister of Finance who had that capacity. Minister Nene also yesterday in his budget vote, I think, just reinforced that any tax revenue collection agency must, to quote him, like Caesar's wife, be above suspicion. The next major step, therefore, towards strengthening public finance is to restore public confidence in SARS. So I'm just trying to give a sense that certainly for the executive, this is a critical issue to resolve as soon as possible. Move on. Chair, and just so that members and everyone's aware, there are about three or four processes in place currently. So firstly, the Commission of Inquiry. I understand that, we'll focus on past issues. I know that we are expecting it to be gazetted this week, the terms of reference and the appointment of the Commission. It's on the point of being gazetted. But I certainly don't want to steal the thunder of my ultimate boss, the President. He will undoubtedly make the announcement. But just to point out that the Commission of Inquiry is... Yunus Karim is my boss, the chair of the committee. Sorry, I'm sorry, Chair. I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. But just to point out, the Commission of Inquiry is expected obviously to be backward-looking in that it will be looking at transgressions that took place in terms of the SARS Act, the various tax administration acts. It may make recommendations for the future arising out of what happened in the past, but it essentially is sort of looking into the past with a view to fixing up for the future. And it will be able to look at issues like VAT refunds and so on. And this is important. You need a Commission of Inquiry to go into tax into matters of particular taxpayers. Nobody else can do that. Not the Minister, not the President. Only Mark Kingdon here can do it in his capacity as Acting Commissioner. None of us can do it. The Davis Tax Committee is a forward-looking committee which focuses on policy issues, not on transgressions and so on. Of course, sometimes policy includes administration, and I do want to bring just to your attention, and not that I agree with all of his report, but that last year, September or in November, he published the tax administration, the report on tax administration for the Minister of Finance. So that's out there in the public domain, and we are preparing even a departmental response because we agree on some of the recommendations, we don't agree on others, but I think it would be worth the committee looking into these issues. And of course, under the auspices of the DTC, you have the independent panel on VAT, which is chaired by Prof. Ingrid Woolard, which you know well about. Thirdly, in a separate process, and this gets to the issue that Mark has touched on, and apologies, Chair, I really thought we were starting at 10 today, so I thought I was 10 minutes early, but it ended up being late. There's a disciplinary inquiry into the SARS Commissioner. Again, I'm just taking what's been put out by the Presidency in the public domain, that the President yesterday announced the appointment of a new presiding officer, Mr. Azhar Bump, Senior Counsel, after withdrawing the appointment of Judge O'Regan. I should add, after objections from Mr. Tom Moyani's lawyers, I should add, the Presidency pointed out that at all stages, ex-Judge O'Regan made it clear that she serves on the Board of Corruption Watch, that though the Presidency didn't think that this was an issue, and I would guess, just to put my own one cent's worth, that, you know, it's a body that's against corruption, you would think there wouldn't be objections, but okay, there were. But that what you then had was the, just to move this process, because it needs to move faster, obviously, on legal advice, the changes were made to the chair. So that's a separate process. It deals with the employer-employee relationship. And I want to add that this will not deal with any tax issues. So even the issue of tax VAT refunds will not be dealt by this committee. This disciplinary process. That will be dealt with through the Commission of Inquiry. Okay? Obviously, you know who the current commissioner is, and then the NT itself has a role. So those are the players and the processes that I think this needs to be kept in mind. Move on. Chair, again, this is the only instance where I do choose the media statement on what the charges are. That they do relate to the Makwakwa matter, they do relate to unauthorized bonus payments, misleading Parliament, and there's various parliamentary questions and so on that obviously the Commission had to respond on, and with regard to KPMG instructing a SARS official not to cooperate. This is out in the public domain. I don't have the source document, that's not been made public the way I understand. On the Commission of Inquiry, the way we understand it in the Treasury, that it will deal with the adequacy and legality of steps that SARS took to address revenue shortfalls, so hence the VAT refunds and so on will come in, and it will also look at adherence to tax administrative processes, including customs and excise. And I should add, Chair, that we hope as Treasury, because a lot of this acts of omission often would also assist or not stop illicit financial flows, that more could be done, and issues of tax evasion of highly connected individuals, like you've heard on the tobacco story. So in our understanding, these will all be covered, including all what Hogan Lovells, PwC, KPMG, all of them will have to talk under oath there. So whatever they say today, it will also be under oath. I would hope the Commission of Inquiry will look at that. Move on. So I think, Chair, just to express some of our concerns, as I said, and you've made me say this, so I won't repeat this, that no ministers have been given by the Commissioner of SARS up to the point of March 19, the report on Hogan Lovells. Indeed, it was deliberately kept away. And that's why, if you just look at it, Minister Gigaba, I think, announced that he wanted a Commission of Inquiry into SARS, I think it was around November last year. And that was given effect by President Ramaphosa. Move on. So, Chair, I think in terms of information, and just to help members, we've just processed, read this, and just to bring to your attention certain highlights of these reports. Move on. Okay. Firstly, I think the first point of reference is what was the FIC request. Now, yes, there's been an issue of whether this can be made public or not public, but frankly, it's out in the public domain. And if you look at what's out in the public domain, it related to four specific requests that the FIC made, related to the proceeds of crime, tax evasion, breach of internal protocols, and money laundering. This was given effect to, move on, to terms of reference. Indeed, in the correspondence between Minister Gordon and Hogan and the Commissioner, he asks, is SARS not telling Hogan Lovells what the terms of reference is, or is Hogan Lovells telling you what the terms of reference is? Really unusual. Okay? So I would like to know, when the Commission finds out, what actually happened, and who said what and when. Okay? And so this was what was there. At some point it got amended. Again, the minister was literally kept in the dark. Hogan Lovells didn't come and tell the minister, okay, because of client confidentiality. So they say. Move on. Again, it was also very unclear who was investigating what. Even if you look at Hogan Lovells, they were saying they weren't investigating the money laundering that was being done by the Hawks, I think, or the police. But yet, if you now read these documents, you'll see that they commission the sources of those cash payments into Mr. Makwakwa's account. Now, if that's not money laundering, I don't know what. But it would be interesting to know that for 1 year, we had parliamentary questions which clearly said what the terms of reference were. About a year later, Hogan Lovells comes and says, no, they're not investigating that. And in a sense, this pretense was kept right up to the point that we got those documents, which I agree, Chair, was a tremendous achievement. It really required a lot to get that report, which showed that they had commissioned a report with PwC. And if you look at the report, one is on the sources of finance, and it appears to be a desktop study, because most of the requests to Makwakwa were done through Hogan Lovells, and that there was also a tax investigation, which of course that report we haven't seen, and that's what the acting commissioner presumably would be able to see and not tell us. Okay, so this was, there was a lot of to and fro on what was actually in the report, and if you then go into the report, you see, the PwC report, it's actually quite astounding. Okay, it's really astounding, even with this desktop study, that you have many of the sources of funding. It's clear from the report that Mr. Makwakwa could not refuse to provide information to confirm. He had an initial response, that the Baker McKenzie report, which was his lawyer's, which was his first response, and then there were two other responses later. And in all of those, what you see, Chair, is that it's only 1,000 or 2,000, a tiny amount which he could confirm. But the most staggering thing, Chair, is that SARS, according to this report, was requested for information. So they did even want to confirm the payments that SARS made to Mr. Makwakwa. Okay, not as his tax payments. If he went on a trip overseas and got a whatever stipend or whatever, even that was not given. SARS was asked about the phone and imaging the phone and the computers of both Mr. Makwakwa and Elski. And even that was refused. Okay. Of course, this investigation went nowhere, and it does appear that the most trivial of charges were put forward. Yes, if you look at the PwC findings, go on to that, so I won't go into all of this. You know, they said they couldn't investigate the foreign currency issue, which clearly was a transgression of exchange control laws, and they didn't have the mandate. And it doesn't appear that SARS was volunteering to investigate that matter. So a lot of issues, as they said, investigate further. It appears there was no interest. Unlike the overwhelming and enthusiasm shown by SARS to go to the end of the earth when it came to the KPMG investigation, in this one you only heard of what were the limits and what they didn't do. And so this certainly raises a lot of questions about why didn't SARS provide that travel-related information. I won't even get into the tax issues, because that, again, the acting commissioner can deal with. Move on. But the basics, the buzzwords and so on, were not, were all raised, but nothing from SARS. The report then goes to Hogan Lovells, who kind of almost filters that report, and whilst they went a bit beyond what the actual charges were, they did talk about the lack of cooperation and I think the Bisworth matter, if I remember, carry on. They seem to have filtered it, but even this filtered version was not enough for SARS. And I think when the journalist Paulie van Wyk says the only charges were relatively trivial, in fact, those that clearly Mr. Makwakwa could explain. But if you read the disciplinary report, Chair, again, it's staggering. Again, SARS didn't actually come and provide information even for those trivial charges. Okay? So, you know, I think obviously the chair, the advocate looking at it, was not given that information from SARS to actually prosecute. And so, surprise, surprise, you know, he was found not guilty on those charges that were laid. But the real charges were actually never put forward. Move on. So, you know, these are just summaries that we're providing for members just to extract from the reports. This is the Hogan Lovells. I'm also dying to hear what they have to say. I should add that they approached me through another advocate to meet with me, and I said, I won't meet with you unless you reveal everything, because the bits they put out were marketing exercises. And at the time when it mattered, they helped state capture, they helped corruption, and they kept quiet because of the higher principle of confidentiality to their client, even though their client was an organ of state. So I think we need to look at the whole issue of confidentiality when it comes to hiding corruption. When we've spoken to advocates, we've been told that that confidentiality does not cover areas of corruption. Move on. So, Chair, anyway, I've even gone through a lot of these charges. You'll see, although there's six, you know, three of them fit into one, three or four, and the others fit into the other. And they relate to two issues. Firstly, that he spoke to, he broke his conditions of suspension by contacting a SARS official, and the other relates to his financial disclosures. Okay, move on. Move on. So I think, Chair, our initial observations is that obviously we don't want to comment on the specific issues in these charges, but we'd like to point out the role of private sector auditing forensic and legal companies. And I should add, Chair, that as we've been looking at state capture, it's not just in this instance. It covers ESCOM, it covers Transnet, that when these reports were made, and often by international companies, and then the official at the time or the person in charge distorts their report, many of these institutions remain quiet. Now, I think we should be looking at the law that, firstly, I don't even think we need to change the law necessarily, but in terms of our corruption acts, is there not an obligation for players in the private sector to also come forward and report? So did they go to the hawks when they saw such open and blatant misleading? Otherwise, they must accept they were complicit in state capture, and they must answer for those crimes if that's indeed the case. Secondly, that if you look at these companies, that so they were directly commissioned, and indeed because of the, well, I've talked about the confidentiality. So we hope that the Commission of Inquiry will go into all the correspondence between these companies and individuals in SARS so that the full truth comes out. And I should add that overseas regulators are much more intrusive and act quicker. You've heard what Lord Peter Hain has done. You've heard what happened to Bell Pottinger. And in this instance, he's reported Hogan Lovells, according to a speech he made, was it this week, that the British company now accepts the South African one as a connected party. And he's called for this company to be boycotted by the UK government, given their role in state capture. So these are very serious allegations that are made, and certainly we want to see the original documents, not marketing statements from Hogan Lovells and anybody else. We want to see all the original documents. Move on. And so, Chair, I'll end on this point of confidentiality and its abuse, because I think this is critical for our democracy, that in a relationship between SARS and taxpayers, this is a canon. It's an important principle to protect for taxpayers. But under its guise, lots of information which have in many instances, very little to do with a particular taxpayer, was kept from ministers of finance, was kept from everybody else out there. And that's the information that we are looking for. Similarly, there are other issues of confidentiality even related to the FIC, and again, we saw that it's been said the report couldn't be given to us. I would say it's in a public interest. When you have these issues, these should be given to a wider set of people. And to the extent that they deliberately conceal to hide crimes, I think we need to look at our the confidentiality in those instances. We have been advised by senior counsel that even in the current one, the interpretation is that in some instances, the info could be given to us. Okay, there's an extreme interpretation of confidentiality that's been used. Yeah. So I think the key question is, you know, how can we ensure that confidentiality is not abused to hide criminal and administrative abuses? How can we ensure more transparency to expose blatant acts of corruption or state capture, which, I should add, also impact on the integrity of SARS or on those institutions? The fact that they did not act impaired their, undermined their reputation and integrity, and indeed, that is the problem that I believe the President is trying to deal with. So, Chair, I thought I'll just give this quick summary and members could take from there.
Any comments, questions, please? Yeah, Mr. Lee.
Chair, I'm happy with the summary that Momo is making. I'll keep on taking you back to the discussions in V227 when I said we need to review this confidentiality. Because now I'm going to make an example. You say if you are doing an investigation and you are giving a scope, but within that scope you discover that corruption is taking place, there should be something that makes it mandatory for you to report corruption or to disclose it. Not necessarily in the institutions that you're going to report to, but to the law enforcement agencies. Because interpretation of what is private and secret about an individual and what is against the law must be separated. And that's what I raised in V226. And that matter needs urgent attention, because we do not know as we sit currently how many audit firms have discovered corruption, but because they were given a limited scope, failed to report it. Up until we pursue those matters, it's only then that they will reveal those matters. So there must be a system in place that's going to call upon them to upfront declare. And I'm challenging SARS to exactly do that, to call upon all South African audit firms who inadvertently has not reported crime to do that. They must be given a special dispensation. Well, whether we decide whether we not find them to disclose, because the disclosure part is going to be very important and not to be too harsh in the beginning, but for them to accept and openly declare their role in not reporting a criminal activity, so that when we legislate moving forward, we know how do we do that to make sure that people understand that the secrecy clause was intended to protect people's tax matters, not to protect corruption and wrongdoing. So we need to be very clear. That's why I'm saying I'm happy that I'm vindicated, Chair. When I raised it, you did not understand where I was going. I was coming here. Because people will do corruption and know that the Tax Administration Act protects them, and you will not be able to deal with that because the FIC will not allow the FIC to disclose. So we will sit in a situation where the FIC know matters, they send them to the law enforcement agencies, and the law enforcement agencies are not acting, and those matters are tossed under the carpet. And we happen to see them if they are in the public discourse, and we are forced to follow the engagements in the court of public opinion. And that's not how we want to proceed. We want to be procedural. Therefore, we must make the laws to be in such a way that it helps us to deal with these matters. I don't think we're going to be very soft on this matter, because when we were in Gurup, we tried to give Hogan Lovells an opportunity to tell us beyond the scope that they were given what they were able to find. And the response was very limited. So we'll come to that, Chair, and I think we'll be very clear when we arrive at that station. Thanks.
Those who had their hands up, I think Mr. Lees and then Floyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. NOVA has given a quite robust summary of these reports, and we've had them since yesterday. I think we got them. That's not really my point, Mr. Chairman. So we've got a robust summary. We've got Commissioner King on being very careful about what questions he asks. And then the report is marked confidential. It has a great deal of taxpayer information in it. So I'm now a little bit unsure of myself as to how much from here I can talk about and how much I can't. Can I, for instance, go and give this to Gay Davis? Or can't I? Or any one of the others. Sorry, I'm not picking on you, Gay. So I'd really like some clarity of it, because it's really quite a difficult one for us to deal with, who want to support what Momo is saying, and including what Tandy is saying, and if you look at the record, you'll see my many parliamentary questions and questions in this meeting from time to time about trying to extract this information. So I think we're of one mind, but we have to obviously be cautious about what the law allows us to do, and then look at changing the law. And I think there's no disagreement about that.
Possibilities of this exchange. Do you want to say something? Because I have to give you information and remind you. I'm going to just like, you're asking a question of substance. She's dealing with a question of process. But maybe you want to come in on process as well. Yeah. Okay, quickly.
Chair, remember when we were discussing this matter, and that's what I want to remind to our members. When we were requesting this information, we were aware that there's confidential information that we cannot discuss beyond the parameters of a committee. And we were asked how we're going to handle it. I said in that meeting, we'll handle it in confidentiality. That's what I said. That's how it was agreed that it will be released. It was on those conditions on that day as we were engaging. Now, it doesn't stop us if we later find that within it there's a wrongdoing to publish that at a later stage. It doesn't stop us to do that. But how we deal with it up until we've come to the conclusion, it should be on the basis on the trust that was built, that was presented at that time. So we need to be men and women of our ways, because we were told that because it's confidential information and the law doesn't give us the parameters towards it, it was based on good faith. So let's remember that. So let's do it in that way. Let's look at it based on the gentleman agreement that made us have access to it. But if we find wrongdoing, it's for public consumption. It will come to a stage where we do that. So Gay and everybody else and Linda will have to wait for a situation where a statement is released and say, this is what we found in the process of engagement of this minute details that belongs somewhere else. Because if we don't do that, expect litigation immediately.
Can I just inform you what happened, right? Are you dealing with the process issue?
Yeah, Chairperson, you have not at hand. I think that is how
we do it. No, you can't. It's very clear. You have a right to speak. Let's not get into that. She's speaking about process. We have to resolve the process issues. But no, I'm ruling. It's a process matter, Floyd, and I have to give you some information before you come in. Actually, Tandy, you're out of order. There's the process matters. One is that we asked for this report in terms of the law and in terms of the rules of Parliament. We requested that information, I want to remind members, Floyd was not here, so he needs to know this before he says on process issues. It's this. I have to inform you, because I have to deal with these issues outside meetings. Right? So what had happened was we had asked the commissioner, as you'll recall, to give us the Hogan's Lovell report and any other relevant report, but to redact sections dealing with people's private taxpayers' details. That's what we asked. He then gave the report exactly at 10 o'clock, not in e-version, but was delivered to Alan Wickham. And there was a letter attached, which I gather you all received, which said that he does not feel comfortable, if that's not the word he used, to remind members. People are half my age and they have bad memories. But it was there. The letter was there that said he has decided not to redact anything, implying that he feels, giving us implying, the subtext seemed to me to be, I'm giving you this report, I'm not happy about giving it to you, I'm doing it because you're going to subpoena it, but I don't think it's right for me to do it, therefore don't expect me to redact it. We tried to get hold of his office to ask him to do it, and we gathered, I think via Alan, that they were refusing to do it. Then in an exchange with Frank Jenkins, we agreed that the members will have the full version that day. These people, Beauty in particular, and I think Teboho and Alan, worked right through to give it to you. So the copy you originally got was an unredacted version. That is the confidential version which only members are entitled to. Now, what was decided, you recall, Frank, I hope your memory is not as bad as my comrades there, that the version that's redacted, I think you and Alan did that, is that correct? That version, Tandy, I hope you're listening, that version, no, this is not about opinions here, it's about the law. That version that was redacted by Alan and Frank, that one we agreed is available to the committee as a whole and the media. When the media phoned me, I told them you will get a copy of it on the day it is tabled in Parliament. Mr. Modise has been ringing me and writing to me about releasing that report. I explained to him the legal constraints. So let us be clear, there are two versions. The unredacted version is available only to the committee members and you received it. The redacted version which you currently have, I take it as the correct version, is the one that is available to anybody in an open committee meeting. Let's not have the discussion we had last week. Okay. Having said that, that's the rule, that's the law. Frank, have I said anything wrong? Right. On the matter, Frank, Floyd, you want to raise?
You know, I will raise it maybe a different. What is this report from Treasury all about? Because why is National Treasury talking about disciplinary issues of the SARS? These are supposed to be the one that gives us a briefing. And the person who is presenting as the allegations himself of wrongdoing with regards to the financial services. Saying what is this report about? Is NSAR supposed to autonomously give us a report about internal disciplinary issues of SARS? Why is National Treasury speaking to such great detail of disciplinary issues and even trying to agitate us that, you know, there's international regulators who are interested in this, and the international regulators mentions Peter Hain. Is Peter Hain a regulator? I think this guy has got vested interest in what is happening there and is not being objective on what he's presenting to us. And that is what he does every day. And we must elevate this to what status. And there's a disciplinary hearing against former Commissioner Che. The issues that some of them are being raised here, and in a very sensational way, might weaken the case which otherwise the state or the president has against the former commissioner, because you've got people with vested interest here who are not supposed to be dealing with internal disciplinary issues of SARS, trying to mix it with the strengthening of tax administration in SARS. But they're mentioning all sorts of things here with vested interest. I honestly think that we must ignore this thing which was presented by the DDG. Must not be given any standing, and let's allow the DC process to continue. But I think there's a political issue that you must raise, which was raised before, that these two cases of proven tax avoidance, which is in the report of the Marikana Commission. Clear information on how loan minutes structured something that had to do with Bermuda and everything else.
and these in the high level panel, which was considered by the African Union, these prima facie illustration of some tax avoidance. They don't mention the company in the example that they give of South Africa, but they say that one corporation has avoided about $2 billion. Either we constitute a separate tax avoidance commission to look into this, or we say as the committee that part of the terms of reference for the strengthening of administration of SARS should look into tax avoidance and call for public submissions. I know, as a matter of fact, that there are lots of credible submissions that will illustrate how a lot of corporations in all sectors are avoiding taxes in South Africa. Instead of the squabbling personalization report which National Treasury says must be balked about it, these cases must be handled through a disciplinary process. We must not be agitated to take sides in terms of what should happen. And we must not endanger the process itself. I think that we must be very careful in terms of what we are doing without endangering the process, which otherwise is going to run its course and then we'll deal with it. But otherwise, what we need to deal with is the phenomena of tax avoidance. That is, and I'm sure the part of the laws of, I think, Article 7 legalizes aggressive tax avoidance. And if you get proper submissions, that is when you can come back here and say that this is how much money we have recovered from these instances. And that will be real figures, not this imagination that the ruling party has that you are combating initial financial flows, illicit financial flows, and tax avoidance.
I've been quiet for some time. No, yeah. You see, we might not use the same demeanor when we want to separate issues. What Floyd is saying is nothing new from what I said earlier on. I said we need to separate these things. That's why we made it very clear of the role of the commissioner in relation to investigation.
Tandy, I can't allow you to the point of
no, order. But we are not going to be blamed here as the ruling party for having not. And I've raised my hand.
Point of order, Floyd, can continue. But can I draw your attention to the program? It points out there that the item on illicit financial flows and illicit tobacco trade is there. I think we should deal with the issues there. What he's proposing, which is something the committee needs to apply its mind to. But fine. But what we must do is have a procedure here, right? Floyd, I've contacted 7 chairs yesterday. I want to talk to you offline. 7 chairs. All of them said I can coach you about how minutes are handled. I want to talk to you offline and not bother this meeting. Right. So let's deal with this, Floyd. Your proposal is a new one. Now, I just want to draw the committee's attention to this to help to facilitate. You are now proposing that the parameters or the terms of reference of the Presidential Commission of Inquiry be expanded. Okay, that's a legitimate thing to ask. Can we look at that under illicit financial flows? Is there some other way we can do it, right? Now that's can we deal with that, right, later down the road? On the matter of accusing now, you keep doing this. It is not right, Floyd. You're implying he's got some vested interest. What vested interest? Has he got some monetary gain or political or ideological gain? Furthermore, we can't function. This parliament allows the executive to speak and parliament to hold it to account. Every time the Treasury speaks, you say, let's dismiss what they say. You know, we covered that last time. So, Floyd, you know the rules better than I do. He's giving the view of the executive. Presumably, his minister has sanctioned that. That's fine. But where you are right, Floyd, where you are right, which is what I was going to come to, we need to ask ourselves, based on our decision yesterday, based now on the input that DDG Momoniat has made, we must get some legal advice that we don't preempt the outcomes. But on Hogan's Lovell, we demanded the report, Floyd. This committee just spent hours and hours engaging with a variety of lawyers to get it, right? Mandated by you. We fought for this report. A lot of energy went into it, which I didn't report to you on. Now we have the report. It is in the public domain. Hogan's Lovell itself has been harassing me to issue it in the public domain earlier. They are here and they'll be given a right of reply. So I think we do not need to take a single proposal into account from Treasury. We've heard them. He's right. But we must decide as a committee the sort of things that Tandi is raising. If we are asking Floyd, you think about it, if we are asking IRBA to have more powers to deal with errant auditors, what about possible allegations against Hogan's Global or any other legal firm who hides behind confidential? That's a point Tandy's made repeatedly. You yourself, Floyd, let me remind you, agreed with the ANC that we must mandate the advocate Jenkins to look into a situation where either the ombudsperson, as Peace Mave suggested, or, as we suggested, this committee. You agreed with this, Floyd. You agreed. You said we should have a closed meeting where if there are allegations against people that are not paying their tax, without it being used to smear people, we should have a closed meeting where we look at it, we allow that person or company to be there, Floyd, and their lawyer, and we look at it, and the documents be taken away. Then Peace Mabe came with the proposal the ombudsperson should do it. Now, given our overwhelming load, you cannot expect Frank Jenkins. He gave us a brief report, which you have in your email system. That issue is a policy of this committee, which at the end of this term, Floyd, we're going to write an exit plan, exit report, and say these things must be addressed by the new committee. So you're making a very useful proposal. It hadn't occurred to us as the ANC or me as an individual chair. I think we should look at that. On the matter of attacking that guy's integrity, Floyd, you must have tea with him. It's not right, really. You keep doing that.
Chairperson.
But you're right to say we shouldn't agree with the report.
Chairperson, we're not making, you know, don't suppress what we as members have to raise. We're not making any allegations against him. We've written a letter to the President, to the Minister of Finance, and to the DG about him, and they have not responded. About his conduct with regards to the issue of the Financial Services Conduct Authority and distortion of the regulations in terms of the financial services structure. And it's not allegations, it's just issues that if they have not proven to be wrong, they remain to be truthful that is involved in wrongdoing. So don't suppress us, we've got a right. That is why we're not gossiping, we're raising it in front of him so that if he has got to clarify, he can clarify. That is why even the acting commissioner can't gossip about him. We raise it in front of him that they have metric, they have a qualification, and then he clarifies. It's basic open engagement, which I think you might need to get used to. Now, the...
From you, Floyd. Please. No. Floyd, that is totally irrelevant.
But I want
to the issue.
Was
again.
Of order,
you are saying,
you are saying
that he has got a vested interest in presenting a report on Hogan Global. What is the relevance of that to claims about his behavior on the FSRA Act, which he must have a right of reply to in the public domain, and I'm going to give you the chance. You have a right of reply. You've been accused of nepotism and also maybe racism as well, right? I think you should have a right of reply in writing at the next meeting. Right. What is not? It's not relevant what he's saying. Now, can we move on the issue?
Yeah. I don't want us to be distracted from the main issues that we're discussing.
But then people have a right of reply to accusations about the integrity.
Yes, Chair, let the matters be raised separately, please.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Today we're here.
I'm ruling, Sandy. I'm now ruling that actually you have a right of reply as any official has to any attacks on your integrity. A letter is in the public domain about your behavior. We don't know. We urge you to ensure that your minister and DG replies to that letter. Can we minute this? We want you to reply to Floyd. He's got a right of reply. He's a member of parliament within 7 days. Right of reply. There's no discussion. It's not a policy issue. Secondly, you also have a right of reply in the public domain. So at an appropriate time, when Floyd is here, we can even do it. Right, the reply. You have a right of reply.
Chair,
but not now at the end of the
sentence.
I've ruled.
Okay.
I've ruled. Right? Now, can we go on? Right. Now, what is the other issue?
Can I quickly sum up these issues that I'm raising? So you're right that the committee demanded the report of Hogan levels, right? And that was prior to the disciplinary hearing against the recently suspended commissioner of SARS, right? He has been charged now. He's going to undergo a quasi-judicial process. If it's actually the judge who's presiding over that, it's almost a judicial process because those judges have to act within the confines of the law. And the National Treasury comes to make emotive inputs on issues that directly relate the disciplinary that hearing itself, even mentions it and all sorts of things, and even tried to agitate Parliament in terms of... Now, you must remember that Parliament, or the National Treasury, acts on behalf of the President, who is the one who has instituted the whole inquiry. Aren't you implicating us in things that won't be able to explain? Aren't you just exposing us to litigation in the future in terms of issues that otherwise could have been handled separately? And if we want a report of a disciplinary process, we will demand it once it has been concluded. I honestly don't see, and I honestly do not see this attempt to agitate us and giving imaginary international regulatory mechanisms, which is called Peter Hain. I don't know what kind of, in terms of all those issues. Now, that is the first issue. The second issue that we're raising is the issue of, we either include the phenomena of tax avoidance in the whole inquiry, or we write to whoever has got the powers to constitute a commission to say, let us specifically look into tax avoidance. That is where we're going to have material benefit. Because you'll be able to point in the National Revenue Tandy that there is money which has been recovered.
Not we'll come back to that. Business. Thank you. Right. But on the issue now of the process, I have to now deal with the process matters. And you tell me by a vote whether you agree or you don't agree. That's the issue now. Basically.
Sorry, can I interrupt? I'm so sorry to do this because I think the process...
You raise the process issue. I'm trying to deal with
yes,
it.
Yes, and I just... Before we...
You did your process?
It. Yes.
Okay, that's
just some
okay.
clarity. My apologies, Mr. Chairman, but I maybe, like you, my memory is fading a little bit. Okay, well, fortunately you, that's fortunate for you, because then you'll be able to clarify for me. The question of the redacted version... I just don't remember getting a copy, and so I'm...
So the one you should have now
is the redacted version. What they give you is the original version by accident.
It seems to be a full version.
No, you see, I didn't look at the version yesterday. Then the committee has made a mistake.
Mr. Chairman, you got to understand my...
No. What should have been released today is obviously the redacted version. Frank, can you help us? You and Alan handled a redacted version.
Before Frank, this is what I've been trying to bring to attention.
Oh, it's not what you have is not a redacted version.
No, it's a full version, and the letter is attached to justify it. So we're playing in dangerous waters.
Okay. All right, look, there's a misunderstanding within the committee, from what I can gather. Is Advocate Tao here? I asked him to come. Nobody deliberately did this. What should have happened? I did not look at the version yesterday. I looked at the... So actually, what has happened, Advocate Tao? Can you sort this matter out again now? Nobody's to blame. Can I stress that? It's an innocent, not malicious, it's an innocent mistake. What has happened is, what was printed, unfortunately... is the unredacted version. Am I right, Frank? Instead of the redacted version. I spoke to Alan on Monday morning. My exchange was with Alan Wickham, who's not here. He's on leave today. I hope Advocate Tao is listening. I asked him to distribute the report, obviously referring to this, because he's been managing this. So what has obviously happened, Tandy, is the wrong one is issued. So what we're going to do now is ask the media if they have a copy of this, to return it, but otherwise they're entitled to the redacted version, and you will get a copy after 1 o'clock. So the media's got no copy, right? This is an unintentional mistake. Nobody's done anything wrong. There's no punitive action here, Advocate Tao. It's an innocent thing. People are overworked, and there's staff problems in terms of one or two people absent. Tandy?
We will not have copies because this was distributed to us yesterday in our meeting.
All right. So
that is overnight.
That is, can we agree, Frank? Are we right to say, Frank, are we right to say that the redacted version is available to everybody?
Yes, sir.
If anybody wants a copy, Teboho is here. At 1 o'clock, you can get a copy. Okay, thank you. Right. Over then to, on the matter of the process, can we also raise this thing? That... Floyd Wright, We raised this at the outset when discussed it yesterday about the process issues. And I think that what we should seek to do now, Frank, is for you to give us some guidance. Frank? Yeah, to give us some guidance. I don't see a problem. See, Hogan Global is here. Now, they have a right of reply. As I understand the inquiry into Mr. Moyane, that inquiry is not into Hogan Global. Is that correct? That, Mr. Momanyan, that inquiry is not into Hogan Global. It has to do with the management by SARS of the Hogan Global report and the Makwakwa. Is that correct? No, the actual disciplinary inquiry. See, Floyd's right. We cannot discuss things here that will prejudice the right of the commissioner to a fair hearing. Yeah. So as I understand it, the disciplinary inquiry is not inquiring into Hogan Global. Right. So the only issue that remains then is, can we not take into account the statements that Momonyat has made about what he thinks should happen to SARS? But he speaks for the executive, the department, the National Treasury, and he has a right to say that. But we are parliament, we don't have to listen to a word he's saying. Floyd is right. Often we change the bills that they come with in policy. That's not a problem. All we ask now is, it's about fair play. What I'm suggesting is the meeting now agrees, and this you can vote. There's no ruling here. I don't have any more powers, but on some things it's clear. The chairperson has to rule. Now, hear what I'm saying, colleagues. Can we say, Frank, you just guide us a bit, on Hogan's Global, the report of Hogan's Global, I think, firstly, people can ask questions about the Hogan's Global report, not about SARS management of it, a few questions, because we read it and we asked for it. Two, is Hogan's Global should be given a chance to reply in 5 or 10 minutes about what happened. The third question that arises, colleagues, is, should we not suggest, as we have, as an individual I have done so, and I've conferred with some of the committee members from the ANC, shouldn't we say something to this effect, that this matter needs to be addressed, not by this committee, where Hogan Global is given a right of reply in some structure, and they can deal with it there. We are not the Justice Committee. And even the justice has been good, so that we can think about where we take it after we hear Hogan's law. But for now, I think we should give them a chance. If people must have a chance of a right of reply, it's not fair. Okay, not just help you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Just on process, not necessarily about Hogan Lovell's right of reply and so on. I think that can be dealt with. If we agree with what Honorable Shivambu has alluded to, it then raises the question, how do we deal with such matters in the future? Is it correct, for an example, that on matters that are being either investigated and processes are unfolding, I mean legal processes thereof, that we should therefore, as a committee, demand that we should be provided with updated reports pertaining to such cases and so on? And if so, in other words, if yes, we get such reports, then do what with them? Now that we have had an update about Mr. Makwakwa's matter, so what do we want to do? So we're informed then to do what? So I think we need to think quite carefully about such matters, because there are serious implications, legally speaking, around these matters of this particular nature. It's something else for us as public representatives to then say, look, we demand a report of a finished product, a finished process, for that matter. And then we can debate and enter into the aspects of such given matters in the most furious manner possible and so on. Right now, Mr. Lees, Honorable Lees, says he has so much that he wanted to delve into, but he doesn't know whether is it right or wrong and whatever the case is and so on. And it's correct. Most of us, you know, are mum on these questions and would like to say certain things and perhaps debate with these parliamentarians and so on. But knowing what legal processes are, we choose not to. But I think as a matter of principle and also even policy, on the side of the community, I think we should take seriously what Honorable Shivambu has raised, because indeed it is a valid point. I'm saying yes now, but also for the future. How do we deal with matters of this particular nature? Thanks very much.
Yeah, no, Nathi, it's good you're raising it, because these questions came up in 2015, and they've come up in 2016. We have taken decisions on them. There is a broad trajectory of policy we do have, which is that we did it with Erba, we did it with Steinhoff, we're also getting senior counsel opinion on those matters right now, where you have regulatory bodies investigating and so on. So the matter has gone now to, I think, external, where's that, Frank, that process? Well, whatever it is, they're coming with an opinion on those issues. So we are reaching an heavy edge of consensus is the following from what I can see. And I would like to make the following suggestion. So some of it is consensus as I see it, maybe I'm wrong, and some of it is proposals based on the experiences we've had in this committee for the last 4.5 years. But firstly, I don't think we need to engage with the presentation, which he has a right to make, Ismail Momunyat. We can give him 2 minutes to respond to any questions raised. We don't have to take that further. Secondly, what we should do is, you know, in regard to the fact that the Hogan's Lovell report is not the subject of a disciplinary inquiry, there may be questions people will ask about the report in and of itself and around the behavior of Hogan's Lovell. To what extent has Hogan's Lovell feel that it acted in a way that defines their profession and so on? They might want to say a few words, a few questions to them, and then we move on. But we have to, we have to take a decision here on the matter. You're saying, so what? No, we are going to take, you've taken one resolution already. Now we're going to take a resolution at the end of this Hogan's Lovell report as well. So we're going to take actions. We're not just having a discussion for being informed. Thirdly, it will provide the basis for our review, as we said, when the whole report's done, then we know we will have a resolution here that will form the foundation for what we do 6 months from now, whenever the disciplinary inquiry is over. So having said that, can we now ask people if they're okay to give Hogan's Lovell a chance to just reply, and then at the end, we proceed to the next item. Yes, Floyd? And Mr. Lee?
I'm not sure, Chair, how the Hogan's Lovell's report doesn't relate to the disciplinary hearing, because it does. The number one charge against the former commissioner is on how the issue of Makwakwa was handled. But this is just number one. I don't know how you're saying it's not related. We can discuss it if... But the possibility
that's
is
all
that
I'm saying. Anyway.
You are subjecting the whole process to an easy-to-win litigation process. Because you can go ahead, but the possibility is that the way you want to handle this might endanger the whole, might even lessen the chances of conviction of whoever is being tried now. So we can do it.
No, Floyd, I'm not saying it's not relevant. I am saying that the issues that relate to the way Holder's Globals related, we're not saying SASMA's answer for the way it managed the Hogan's Lovell report. We are saying Hogan Lovells might want to say something about the way they behaved as being consistent with the profession of lawyers. And there's nothing unethical. They have a right to say that. And then we can ask them whether you behaved ethically. We're not dealing with the way SARS manage it, but you know what? I'm done. The majority can decide. There's no like ruling here in terms of some rule. So you decide as a majority. Do you want to give Hogan Lovell a report? I propose a right of reply for a few minutes, 10 minutes or whatever, and then we look only at the issues that relate to whether they believe they acted ethically, whether they believe that they didn't use the confidential clause to hide corruption. That's what they have been accused of, both here and in the media. It's their right of reply. But, hey, you can decide now. I'm done. Right. What is your proposal as a committee? I will go by a majority view.
Chair, my comments earlier on was bringing a middle ground. A middle ground that was not a yes or no question, but was saying we need to come to a point where we write a report about the conduct of audit firms in relation to where they picked up corruption and they did not act. And legal firms. Both ways. Now, we might want to allow Hogan Lovells to comment on what we have said and not come to the conclusion whether they've committed any wrongdoing, because they have directed us to their scope of work that they were given, which became a limitation to put a report. So, you see, Chair, you want us to help you, and now you're engaging Floyd. Because the danger of coming to the conclusion in the current conjuncture, it will be a preconceived on the basis of what still needs to transpire. So that's why I came earlier on with the middle ground. That suggests that people should upfront declare when they pick up wrongdoing. Because that doesn't, there's no law that prohibits them to do that. Yeah. So, Chair,
allow them to reply, yes or no? There's no indication.
Chair, they've got the right of reply.
So we should allow them. Good, thank you. And secondly, we're not going to carry out a full investigation here. We're only dealing with, if I understand correctly, Floyd, their right to say, look, we did nothing wrong. You see, there's a media here, Floyd. It's not fair, really. Please, can I plead with the members, right? Ultimately, you can outvote me. It is not fair that people have said things about Mr. Lavery's outfit, right? And he doesn't have a chance to even profile and say, look, it's not correct. This is how we see it as lawyers. Then what happens after that, Floyd? That commission, not the disciplinary inquiry, the commission can deal with that matter. Or we can propose the commission deals with it. Right, Mr. Lees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think what may be getting a little bit lost in this discussion is the fact that so much, if not all of this, has already been in the public domain for a long time. And so there's no way that we can sit here and pretend that that's not the case. And so there's no way that we can then say, well, Parliament can't deal with this issue because the process hasn't been completed of some disciplinary case. It's in the public domain. It has to be dealt with by Parliament. It would be an abrogation of our duty if we didn't. The extent to which we deal with it, I have to concede, has to be in some way limited. But we have to deal with it. We can't not deal with it because some disciplinary process is in place. That would simply be an abrogation of our duties. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm absolutely in agreement, and we are absolutely in agreement, that Hogan Lovells get given the opportunity to respond and deal with what is in the public domain. And, Mr. Chairman, I suggest to you that that whole report is in the public domain. I need to check, but I suspect it is.
Yeah, apparently it's in the, I didn't know that. Okay, if it's in the public domain, let's not have that discussion again. Yeah, then it's available. Okay, in that case, can we agree then what Tandy and Mr. Lees are saying are broadly similar? Now, can we be clear about what we're saying, right, before I ask them? Mr. What did he say? You'll be allowed up to 10 minutes to respond, right? No, it's similar, yeah. So let's agree on this. Within 10 minutes, if you can kindly respond, the members will only focus, not on SAR's management of your report, but any issues relating to the role, not of yourself, but of lawyers in general, when it comes to state-owned entities and public money, like we're doing with auditors, as Tandy says. Tandy, okay. Well, I'm not going to repeat that. Fine. Peggy will explain to you what I said. I'm not going to repeat that. Thanks. I haven't got the time. Mr. Modise. Thank you.
I'll take more or less the same time as the DG General, the Director, the Deputy
Director General has taken.
No, you're not going to
do that. You're going to be given 10 minutes. Okay, you can't decide.
I'll finish within 10 minutes, I can assure you. I've previously publicly stated that I wanted our confidential and privileged report to be made public, but then it was for SARS to waive its attorney and client privilege. I am delighted and somewhat relieved that SARS has released our reports to this standing committee and that you are now giving us this opportunity to publicly answer your questions to our report. We have the view that our report is a significant missing piece of the puzzle that I hope emphatically and finally puts an end to any further speculation about Hogan Lovell's role and involvement in the Makwakwa's disciplinary inquiry. Any statement that Hogan Lovell's investigation extended into allegations of criminal conduct or tax evasion on the part of Makwakwa and arising from the FIC report is misleading and totally incorrect. Our letter of engagement, which is public and attached to a December 2017 Daily Maverick article, made it clear up front, and this is confirmed by our report, that our labor-related investigations in relation to Makwakwa were focused on whether any of the suspicious, unusual or ad hoc payments identified in the FIC report were a breach by Makwakwa of SARS internal policies and or Public Management Finance Act. In other words, whether it amounted to misconduct in the employment context investigation into criminal conduct and tax evasion had to be made by the Hawks and SARS within their respective statutory and constitutional mandates were not matters that Hogan Lovell could legally attend to. Our report we submit clearly and unequivocally follows our letter of engagement. The disciplinary inquiry itself was therefore a properly convened disciplinary inquiry at the time consistent with labor laws, our letter of engagement and the express recommendations contained in our report to address only the specific labor-related matters that Hogan Lovell was legally permitted to investigate and address. In this context, our letter of engagement, our report and the disciplinary inquiry were not on any stretch of the imagination part of a masterfully designed whitewash plot to ensure that Makwakwa was permanently reinstated, as suggested by some in the media, who unfortunately did so without the benefit of studying our report. It is clear from our mandate set out in our letter of engagement and our report that there is still a series of critical outstanding parallel investigations being conducted by the Hawks and SARS into Makwakwa's conduct in relation to the unusual, suspicious and ad hoc payments identified by the FIC. The outstanding criminal and tax evasion investigations, which can only lawfully be conducted by the Hawks and by SARS, once concluded may well lead to further separate charges of criminal conduct of tax evasion being prosecuted in a competent criminal court or tax court against Makwakwa. Against this background, I turn now to address some specific accusations and criticism publicly leveled at Hogan Lovell. We have been accused of, open quotes, tailoring, close quotes, our letter of engagement to deliberately limit our investigations and the resulted charges that could be put to Makwakwa at a, open quotation marks, questionable, close quotation marks, or whitewash, or open quotation mark, Cook disciplinary inquiry. Our answers to this are that it is not Hogan Lovell's, but it is a law that dictates that the Hawks, not Hogan Lovell's, are lawfully entitled and best suited to investigate alleged criminal activities or activities where individuals are obstructive and to procure admissible evidence for possible prosecution in a criminal court which can then be used in a disciplinary inquiry. It is likewise dictated by law that SARS, not Hogan Lovell's, is entitled to investigate any alleged activation and to procure admissible evidence for possible prosecution in a tax court. Therefore, any statement that Hogan Lovell's open quotation mark tailored close quotation mark is letter of engagement is correct and wrong in law. We have also been accused of not putting all possible available charges from the FIC report to Makwakwa at the disciplinary inquiry. Our answer to that is that all possible charges available at the time within the scope of our letter of engagement and as expressly recommended to our report were put to Makwakwa at the disciplinary inquiry. As background, PwC Forensics was appointed by Hogan Lovell to conduct a forensic investigation to make factual findings as to the identities of the source of funds in relation to payments identified as suspicious, unusual, or ad hoc in the FIC report, which identification would assist Hogan Lovell to determine whether or not Makwakwa had breached any SARS internal policies and or the Public Finance Management Act, as we are required to do in our letter of engagement. The PwC source of funds report provided to us was inconclusive as to the facts relating to the identity of the size of the sound of the source of funds, because SARS in its capacity as employer was limited in its ability to investigate any employee's sources of income. The hawks were best placed with the necessary powers to investigate the nature and source of the funds, and the investigation was not complete. It is a question of law whether or not inconclusive findings of fact as contained in the PwC source of funds report would justify any charge at a disciplinary inquiry, relying on the identity of the sources of funds to substantiate the charge. In our professional opinion, it did not. And so, in discharge of our ethical and professional duties, we recommended in our report the charges that could not be substantiated by the facts could not be put to Makwakwa at a disciplinary inquiry. In a perfect world, the Hawks and SARS would have ideally concluded their respective investigations by the time of the disciplinary inquiry and provided conclusive admissive evidence. We have been accused of not demanding that SARS provide us with the PwC tax evasion report, because surely that report would have constituted admissible evidence of tax evasion and a dismissible offense. And SARS not providing that report should surely have been a red flag for us. As background, SARS had outsourced the tax evasion investigation in relation to Makwakwa as a taxpayer to PwC because of his seniority and conflict with having other SARS employees investigate such a senior employee. The PwC tax evasion report therefore constitutes part of SARS investigation into any alleged tax evasion. Our answers to this allegation are as follows. First, the matter of investigating and prosecuting any alleged tax evasion was not, as a matter of law, part of our role under the relative engagement, so it was not and could not have been a red flag for us. We have also been accused of being involved in questionable or whitewash or cooked disciplinary inquiry because statements have been made and an impression has been created by some in the media that Hogan Lovells investigated, open quotes, all, close quotation marks, close quotation marks, the possible charges arising from the FIC report and put all possible charges to Makwakwa at the disciplinary inquiry. And the disciplinary inquiry then exonerated Makwakwa of all possible charges. Our answer to this are that, having regard to the above background and context, including the reality that there are still outstanding investigations into Makwakwa's conduct by the Hawks and SARS, as outlined in the letter of engagement and our report, it is clear that such statements and impressions are simply wrong, misleading, and disingenuous. It follows that any reliance on any such misstatements and impression is either a mistake or cynically deliberate. In order to assist the standing committee with a series of events documents, I have set out a brief chronology of events and documents which contextualizes the matter and which I incorporate below in my statement for your convenience. Mr. Chairman and honorable members of the standing committee, in conclusion, Hogan Lovells has prior to and since my appearance before the standing committee on 5 December 2017, been under immense public attack by persons who did not have all the facts, who in some cases did not care what the facts were, or chose to ignore the facts, or who simply insisted that we as lawyers should break our legal, ethical, and professional obligations and apologize and come clean as regards our role in the investigations relating to Makwakwa and his restatement. As attorneys, we are required to fulfill our professional role without fear, favor, and to do it so at all times, honestly, ethically and professionally, which we have done. We do not take our professional obligations lightly. We have not been tempted, nor have we succumbed to immense pressure by politicians, individuals, or the media to breach our professional obligations. If I did so, I would no doubt have been sanctioned by our law society and would possibly have been struck off the roll of practicing attorneys. Our license to practice law could even be revoked, and some of our employees could lose their jobs. We fully respect and salute the efforts of professional investigative journalists and all the good work they do and continue to do for all of us South Africans. Regrettably, however, information and documents in the Makwakwa matter have been leaked to the media piecemeal and selectively. For very good reasons, and as part of the developed legal system, we as attorneys are bound not to disclose to third parties our client's confidential and confidential documents. This, unfortunately, has created a platform for rife speculation in the media targeting Hogan Lovells. Fundamental to a democracy is a rule of law. This means that even in the case of Makwakwa, like any other citizen and employee, is entitled to due process and not to have unsubstantiated charges prematurely put to him at a disciplinary inquiry. As lawyers, our fundamental professional rule, no matter how unpopular it makes us in the public eye, it is to uphold the rule of law. and apply due process, including professionally assessing all the available admissible evidence lawfully procured against the likes of Makwakwa and presenting a substantiated case with reasonable prospects of success to an independent chair at a disciplinary inquiry. In dealing with the role of lawyers in our society, former Chief Justice Arthur Chaskalson, may his soul rest in peace, stated the following, open quotation marks, without the assistance of lawyers, judges would not be able to discharge their constitutional duty to uphold the law without fear or favor. It is in the public interest and in the interest of clients that the culture of the legal profession should be rooted in the independence of the profession, and that lawyers should not be subject to outside influences or be concerned that if they take any case for a particular client, they will incur the hostility of the government or other instances. We trust now the release of Paisar's of a report will end all speculation about our role in relation to the disciplinary inquiry can finally be explained, and that all notions that the disciplinary inquiry was questionable or a whitewash or could can now be put to rest. Finally, and I just want to state to the committee that there is nothing that we did in this matter without the advice or input of senior counsel. I would like to see the written opinion of a senior counsel who said confidentially does not cover areas of corruption. I would like to see that. It is also not true what Lord Peter Hain is alleged to have said, that the SRA has ruled that Hogan Lovell South Africa is a connected party. Hogan Lovell South Africa is under the oversight of the Law Society of South Africa and not Britain. A lawyer may not choose to waive confidentiality. Only a client can do so. In this case, SARS had not waived his confidentiality. That is the law, and it is law that is very trite. Mr. Chairman, is there any questions that the parties want to direct at us? My colleague, Mr. Basil Badenhorst, next to me, are happy to answer any questions you may have for us.
Thank you. We have Mr. Lees's hand up. Any other questions? Mr. Lees.
Mr. Chairman, I've been listening carefully, and I could easily have got it wrong, but in a sense, the main thrust of the presentation now is about confidentiality and the restrictions that members of the legal profession face. So the client for Hogan Lovells in this case was the South African Revenue Service, not Mr. Makwakwa. So my question is, given the contents of the PwC report, which you, as I understand it, you commissioned, and which seems to me, in my brief reading since I got the report yesterday, to indicate the possibility of tax evasion and the inability of SARS or the unwillingness of SARS to provide information in order to explain various transactions which PwC looked at and that you comment on in your full report, not just in the addendum of PwC. Is your position then that client confidentiality protected Mr. Makwakwa when Mr. Makwakwa was not your client? And if so, on what basis would you make that presentation to us? And Mr. Chairman, if you look at paragraphs 18 and 19, I find it quite disturbing that Hogan Lovells can come here and attempt to take the high moral ground and then make generalized accusations, and I'll read it. Been under immense public attack by persons who did not have all the facts. Who are these persons? Who
Who are they? Tell us. Paragraph 19. Immense pressure by politicians. Is that me? Is that Honorable Tobias? Who is it? Individuals or the media? These kind of general comments are not useful in assisting this committee to deal with this matter. So, Mr. Chairman, I would like to know on what basis Mr. Makwakwa, the information that was divulged about Mr. Makwakwa, which appears to lead to tax evasion and possible corruption, money laundering, was deemed to be protected in terms of client confidentiality. And please, could we have some details of who we're referring to in this report?
Chairperson, I think we are rushing in where angels would otherwise yet to tread. Number one charge against Commissioner or former Commissioner Tom Moyane is gross mishandling of the Financial Intelligence Center report of 17 May 2016, looking into the SARS official Jonas Makwakwa. Right? And this report, which Hogan Lovers is speaking about, relates directly to that. This is subject to a disciplinary process. Do you want us to entertain that? I don't know where the wisdom to entertain this issue in detail comes from. The good thing about the law is that it takes its course, and if we're not satisfied about it, if we think that we must subject it to a judicial review, we can do that. Why don't we get a consolidated report after the disciplinary process has run its course, and then we'll deal with these issues afterwards? I honestly do not know why we are in a hurry. I don't know why we're in a hurry and everything else. I don't know why we're in a hurry when there's a process that is a judicial process or a quasi-judicial process, which I'm sure is going to be thorough in terms of entertaining all this information.
And then, Frank, can you help us?
Chair, the waters are becoming murkier as we continue. You see, I don't know what else to do. And I've been pleading to follow the procedure so that we are safe, all of us, and so on. And it doesn't occur. And I insisted by the middle ground that I provided that let's allow Hogan Lovell to comment on issues that related to what they might have discovered as issues of criminality that they could have acted on, and the rest we leave them to process. You see, once Honorable Liz asked about tax evasion, once you ask that question, when there's a commission that's going to deal specifically with that, then we are already in trouble, Chair. And I don't know how to put it. You know, we are not supposed to discuss any of this matter here.
Is there anything else you want to say? There's no need to be so melodramatic. It's very simple. We asked him to focus on the... He chose to speak to that. He chose, Mr. Modise chose to say those things. Therefore, he's right to ask it. Now it's for the lawyer to guide us whether it's relevant or not. But Mr. Modise opened up the door. He could have focused on what you're saying, but he's using this to rationalize other things. So Mr. Leith is right to raise it. There's no issue. I can't decide these things. Now, on the process, can people just suggest a way out? I don't think we should answer. You shouldn't answer Mr. Modise. I think Floyd is right, but so is Mr. Lees. And so are you, Tandy. All of us are right from different vantage points. Nati?
I want to be right.
If you were chairing, you'd do the same.
I'm not saying anything about your chairing. I'll reserve that for another day and for another time and for some Dhaka smoking sessions. Now, those of you who don't know, this is a minister of police until a few days ago. Look, I agree with most of the points that have been ventilated, and I just want to caution against some attitude that I actually think that is quite dangerous to us and for ourselves as members of parliament and to us as citizens, generally speaking. You see, we can't come here and begin to want to suggest that because we wanted certain things to be known to us and therefore confidentiality as a matter of law, for an example, and a principle of law, as well as a convention, should be ignored. We can't do that. Because that's an elaborate exercise to get into, which will then take you back into the framework of our own constitution, amongst other things, and to some other aspects of the foundation of where law is based and so on. Now, so I think we should then be careful, because then the next thing we will be understood as, yes, we are for law and we are for the rule of law, but we are for the rule of law and for law in its application so long as it pertains to certain individuals and not to certain individuals and so on and so on. And I think that's wrong. That would be entirely wrong. So I agree that perhaps the broader issue, and I think it's a matter that Ms. Tobias, Honorable Tobias, had also raised, that...
You can call it Humphrey.
Sandy, you're still in the ANC, right? If you want.
That basically, I think we shouldn't discuss this matter any further. You know, we pulled it up here.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Let's just focus on the issue Tandy raised. Right? Can I summarize what I think you're saying? The fact is, what you seem to be saying is that it's not true that you are hiding behind a confidentiality clause to cover corruption. Is that what you're saying? Absolutely no. Secondly, you're saying, if I understand you correctly, that the client-lawyer relationship is something that's sacrosanct and it's a principle, right? Okay, fine. Now, then the committee might want to think about saying this, right? That is the only issue we're looking at, right? You feel you behaved ethically. Fine, so you've answered. Now your thing is in the public domain, this statement. So the media is free to interview you, but they're also free to interview the DDG and whoever else they want. All parties can speak for themselves. Right? As far as the committee goes, I would like to make a suggestion. Consistent with things we've done in the past, I don't know whether the committee will agree, but I would like to suggest the following. Something to this effect in a decision that we take. Now, she's not here to take the minutes, so I'll be guided by the words. I have put something down on paper somewhere. I don't know where it is right now, but something like this, based on a previous exchange we had with, I don't think it's fair for this committee to come to any definitive conclusions. We are not competent to judge whether the Hogan's Lovell behaved ethically or not. It's not something we can decide. We're not a commission of inquiry. Moreover, it's likely, I think, that in the broader commission, not the disciplinary inquiry so much, in the broader commission, Hogan's Lovell itself might be subject for a review of its role. Whereas here, in the disciplinary inquiry, it's about Mr. Moyane and SAR's management of the report that Hogan's Lovell gave them as related to the FIC report. So can't we say something broadly like this, that this committee is not able, nor does it have the competence, nor the authority to judge whether Hogan's Lovell behaved appropriately. But what we can suggest, as Hogan's Lovell itself has said, that perhaps the Law Society or the new, what's it called, the Legal Practitioners Council should consider looking into the conduct. And ideally it should have a retired judge in it. And the Justice Department and Committee, I can send a letter to Matole and the Minister, should look into whether it's appropriate, whether there's a need to address these issues in the way we as this committee is demanding that it be done for auditors. There's only yesterday the minister said the bill. I checked with the minister's office yesterday. Apparently the bill was meant to go to cabinet today, or will go to cabinet in 2 weeks' time. We're calling it the IRBA bill. If you look at the report adopted while I was away last week, in that report it says that we want IRBA to have these powers. Okay? So similarly, as with auditors, it's not our rule. We've done this before. We refer it to the justice portfolio. So something loose like that that says the committee can come to no final conclusions. However, we think in both the public interest, Hogan's Global interest, that there should be some inquiry. I think Mr. Modise told me he himself would like the law. Is that correct, Mr. Modise? You told me over the phone, if I remember correctly, that you would like the Law Society to investigate. Is that what you said?
Written to them.
So there it is. They themselves have done it, right? So the conclusion of this committee is, just like auditors, lawyers need to look at their principles, professional ethics. We're not saying you're guilty or anything. We're not talking about you. We're talking about auditors in general, lawyers in general, and that if appropriate legislation has to be introduced to avoid the balance between confidentiality and exposing public corruption. The point that Momo raises, whether one agrees or disagrees with his formulation, I think that's an important one, right? And I think this committee should not leave this thing hanging in the air. So that's sort of, if you give me some latitude, I will draft it along those lines and issue it in a statement which I'll send you a copy of. And as Tandy says, we'll do it as fast as possible.
We'll have to do it before the GA.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's fine. No, no, they have a right. They've probably issued it already and said they are responsible for the formulation that I have presented. But you know what? It's their right. Let the journalists get deluded and play to that. That's their right. Now, this is the committee decision. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, they can be played. It's fine. They don't want to be investigative and check. That's fine. So can we move on? Is that broadly agreed? I will draft it, Tandy. I have to chair and draft at the same time. Right. So the next point then is the KPMG report.
Chair, just on a point of order, yeah. I mean, I'm quite happy for the committee to put out statements, provided, and I think it's good to do so,
yeah.
Provided that they've been agreed to by the committee.
Yes, that's right. So we've agreed on this thing. That's what normally happens. It's never that I've issued a statement except in reply to your falsification.
Doesn't mean that the DA disagreed, yeah. The committee did not agree. They are not committed.
We're not going to do
that. Just
we've been
through
this for
the
last
committee.
3 years. There's no fair play in this matter. But let's move on. It's an open democracy. Go and issue your statement as long as it's on a DA letterhead, but don't speak for the committee. That's what we're saying. Right. My brother,
Mr.
We're done with this thing, please.
No, just,
and you are right to raise your questions, I've agreed.
Yeah, but are we going to say no replies?
No replies, given that. But you are right to raise them because he opened the door. Tandy had set the parameters, he came with a pre-prepared thing, but it's right, now the media must interview him, he must go and do interviews to present your case. Floyd, can we move on, please?
So, you know, Chair, there's an issue which I think must take note of, because it's now happening for the second time. When the DDG speaks here,
yeah.
He mentions Peter Hain, and mm-hmm. Even here in the report which Hogan Lovell speaks about, Peter Hain is a member of parliament, of a British parliament.
Yeah.
And then we must then concern ourselves, we're not a colonial outfit of Britain. I think, like, honestly, we must not be put under pressure by some former colonizers or colonizers who think that they can interfere with domestic issues. We have got the capacity as Parliament, as South Africa, to deal with our issues without involvement of Peter Hain or anyone of that matter.
Except that what should be fairly said, for those who may not know, the younger generation, Peter Hain was the head of the anti-apartheid movement. He recently got an award. He didn't interfere. He was approached by people. But nevertheless, the point is that we cannot say because somebody in some other country has taken a decision, and look, Nati, in fairness to you, we take part in a global financial system, and the way it works is whether you like it or not, the regulators take decisions internationally. Whether that happens in the justice sector, I don't know. So both points are correct. The point being that we cannot be dictated to. Of course, our national sovereignty mustn't be undermined. On the other hand, as part of the international anti-apartheid movement, we had Peter Hain is a comrade, and only last week or the week before, he was given an award for his contribution, I think. Both points are correct. Can we move on, please, Nati, with due respect? I mean, it's not going
to
help.
I just wanted to say, Chair, it does matter his background, and this point is fundamental, this point. It's fundamental wasted by the English. I mean, it can't. It just cannot. So this point of referencing what we do to them is incorrect. Whether he was with us, and of course, that history, by the way, I know it. We all participated in it and so on and so forth. But it can't be. Yeah,
but at the same time, I'm drawing attention to this. Like, it's not just like some...
But, Chair, the other thing is that he takes domestic issues of South Africa and raises it in the House of Lords there. We do not have House of Lords in South Africa. We don't recognize
fine,
House of Lords.
Point is
it must be clear that he must, tell him, must write that parliament and tell them that they must interfere in their own issues and stop interfering with domestic issues.
That's not something he must speak to the Speaker of Parliament to do. This committee is not going to enter into international relations or go to the International Relations Committee. What's it called? DERCO. Yeah. Yeah, let's not discuss it. Can we move on? I knew it was going to happen. Right, can we move on, please, and look at the KPMG report? Now, basically, there, too, the committee discussed this matter yesterday. Based on what the minister said, we said we're not going to deal with this at great length. The same parameters will apply. Is there anything you want to say, firstly, from SARS?
Thank you, Chair. And just to put on record that SARS is not engaging in the contents of the report and aspects of the report due to the fact that it's linked to the disciplinary processes with the Commissioner that is currently underway. But I did want to state a couple of aspects, just that it be in the record. Since being appointed, I've been reviewing various documents pertaining to the whole KPMG process that has been dealt with. We have had initial engagements with KPMG's new team, at the early stages after my appointment, and subsequent to that, my team has been discussing various options pertaining to that. The key issue that I want to leave is, number one, we are in a process of going through this report and the more so the implications of the report. My key concern, and this is what I want to put in the table here today, is that the report in itself caused a lot of harm in our organization. It divulged private details of certain things pertaining to people which should never have reached the public domain, and as a result, people's dignity has been damaged, and some of our staff have been severely damaged through the process. Staff who've been extremely instrumental in dealing with, for instance, illicit flows and other things. Now, that process is on the way, on the go, and we will continue to deal with the staff issues. But to the extent that staff have been hurt and people have been seriously hurt, I have in my capacity been dealing with that, and I'm trying to seek that they'll be restored, that they become full members of our team and contribute. That's all I want to say in the public. I think in such reports we must be so careful that we don't put details in any report, and there was the earliest Gekekani report, which was published by the board, as well as the KPMG report, where staff are mentioned in a fashion where they're not given right of reply. And that is damaging to people. And we must protect, as the commissioner, and I'm here just in that capacity, I must protect my staff, and that is what I'm doing. And I just wanted to put that on record. That's all for today, because I don't think I can go further.
Anything you want to raise, bearing in mind that we have an investigation pending, and this is much bigger than the earlier item on the agenda because it spans everything. Okay, so I'm glad nothing's being raised. There is a representative of KPMG. You have spoken before. We can't force you to say anything, but we don't want to prevent you. If you want to, for 2 minutes, say anything, and then we move on.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think just from a KPMG perspective, we respect the process that SARS is undertaking and engaging with, and to the extent that we can assist further and also assist the committee further, we undertake to do so.
Okay. So what's the outcome? Anybody want to suggest? Okay, can I quickly suggest a proposal, right, which is to say that bearing in mind that there's an investigation, the committee will not pursue this matter further. We'll wait for the outcome of the thing, the KPMG thing, and that we urge that both the disciplinary inquiry and the state commission
be expedited. Now, for example, this committee has repeatedly asked, not least last week you voted on this, members should actually hopefully read what they vote on, because I'm merely repeating what's said there. We asked again that the president establishes this commission expeditiously. If I'm correct, you even asked me to write.
That's
what. Yeah, so right, so we're doing, right? Now, what I want to suggest is that we say, we heard today that the commission is about to be established. We urge that it be done. It's taken far too long. We hope that an appropriate panel or whatever will lead the thing, and that they will finish their work expeditiously and fairly, following which we will consider their report. So that's broadly a decision we're taking. So whatever happens, if they finish in, say, end of this year, immediately after that we should call them in to report to Parliament and via Parliament to the people, right? Okay. Floyd, do you want to say something, my friend?
I think that, Chair, as a committee, we should decidedly say that the revenue collector should not have any relationship, if it has now, with KPMG. Like, if these contracts which they have to finish, they must finish and go. I think that is one of the resolutions you must take, that KPMG, I'm saying that we should take a decision, a decided decision that the revenue collector must not have any relationship with KPMG. Like, the AG has already given light that they are disengaged with KPMG. It is objectively a corroborator in corruption and wrongdoing. So I think we must advise, sir, so that they use...
Now, you know why he has a right of reply? He's exactly undermining what you said earlier and what Nazi said.
This objective basis now, which the Auditor General has used as a basis of disengaging the services of KPMG. So I think we should as well advise them. And we have raised this before with the AG and everyone else. I think we should take that posture that we must stay away from this.
Privately, I have my own view about that, and I think you can anticipate what I think, right? But you are the very person who's acting like Advocate Shivambu today and veering in the extremely conservative direction. I hope your EFF people are noticing how you behave in that. Now you're saying the opposite. You're saying, let's take a decision now. Explain what is the rationale for that now. There's an investigation. You can't base it on
the objective reality is that the South African constitution and legal framework acknowledges the office of the Auditor General, right, in terms of their standards of auditing and everything else. And the AG has come to an objective conclusion and even gave reasons publicly that. So I'm saying that because we want to preserve the integrity of SARS. Can we advise SARS that they should consistently got the AG has taken as a decision, not engage at all with KPMG on anything, because it is not only on the incidents that the AG used as a basis of his disengagement with KPMG. There are so many others. SARS must stay away from KPMG so that its integrity is not dented and is not tainted.
If I can summarize, right, what you seem to be saying is you're asking them, SARS, to consider, because we can't instruct them as I know it, right? We seriously consider, we can even say, that you forego the services of KPMG, not because of KPMG's role or otherwise, correct or otherwise, in respect of SARS matters, that we determine by an inquiry and a commission, but because of the AG's decision on that. Oh, I see that. Okay, that won't undermine our parameters necessarily. I'm not a lawyer. Advocate Tobias Tobolo.
You see what you make us to discuss in meetings, Chair. You see... but you make us, you allow us to discuss it.
I can't stop him.
You can.
How?
You have rules. Chair, we must not blur the lines. You see, first, it's setting us up. He's got a good point, he knows, but he's using it in a wrong platform. And you know why? Because he's campaigning. And not in the committee.
Campaigning right now?
I'm not campaigning. I'm just making sure that we follow the spirit and the letter of the law.
I'm so fed up with this process, really, because it's simple. You have a right to ask his question. You have a right to say, let's proceed.
Chair, the spirit of auditing firms committing mistakes, we are in the same spirit. But there are certain things that we cannot do as the legislator. And we know that. And Floyd is playing in that environment. Yeah, it's not right. You can't say to people, go hire this one, don't hire this one, and so on. It's not our competence to do that. But the spirit is correct, and so on. And you, like, you make him dance and sing and do all sorts of things, and, you know, and...
But it's really out of my job. I can't, he's got rights. The rights that you fought for, he was too young then.
Yeah, but he gives me trouble. And
isn't the rights and you want to take it away?
No, he's got beautiful rights. He's doing very good. He's doing the job that I can't do, but sometimes he goes a little bit further.
Right to speak, right. Nati, you want to say something, my friend?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So can I suggest, Tandy's right, but so is Floyd. You could say, it's no resolution, but you could say that this committee, to put it mildly, is utterly outraged at the errant behavior of auditors. And look at our report last week. However, on the specific matter of your relationship with KPMG, all we can urge is that as soon as possible, after the outcome of the investigations of the commission and the disciplinary inquiry, you must give serious consideration to your future relationship with SARS, with KPMG. Is that okay, Tande?
Yes, sir.
That's a compromise, taking into account what Advocate Chivambu was saying earlier. And taking into account what Advocate Tobias Pokolo has said, that's a compromise. But privately, do you think any ANC member agrees or disagrees with you? Think about it, Floyd. We don't have a collective incapacity on this issue. What do you think? We're taking account of what Advocate Chivambu had to say. Yeah. But he has a right of reply. You provoked him, right of reply.
It's not collective incapacity, it's collective cowardice.
Okay. I want to tell you on the offline who used that term first, eh? I didn't hear it from you. Heard it from an ANC member, I think she knows who I'm talking about, who said it to us, remember, in the study group. Okay.
Chair, thank you. I suppose it's a difficult one, and I don't want to make too much of a statement around it, but just two responses that it's not left unanswered is I think the statement was made that as a fact that the firm has collaborated in corruption, and we have not admitted that at all. And we don't agree to that statement. So we fully respect any entity's procurement process to appoint us. But in respect of the honourable member's comment around our role in corruption, we don't agree with that.
Okay. Obviously, the AG doesn't agree with you, but that's another story. Revenue race, my friend. Now I can relax. Good. I can lay back now and fall asleep. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean that. It was a facetious remark. Okay, over to Sir.
Chair, we can deal with the revenue results for 2017-18, and our acting CFO will take us through this now.
Thank you, Chair, and the committee. The results that we will be talking to today are in the process of being audited by the Auditor General. We've just finalized the draft financials that we'll be submitting on Monday, so they are not audited at this point in time. However, I think it suffices that we provide a view of where we ended the financial year, particularly because the information is already in the public domain.
Sorry, is it good for David to only pay for juicy stuff and then when you deliver it,
no, he's issuing his statement on behalf of the committee. As long as he issues a DA statement, right? You'll say the committee decided. If you don't know, qualified for what it's worth.
Shall I continue?
After the statement last night. All he does is puts the commas and full stops in. By the way, Floyd, did I get you right yesterday? Like 2 seconds after he put his head up and said, we support this thing on your stuff. He tweeted, right? The DA's of the DA. Because the way it came across this morning was like the DA decided that Euster will be... That's the way it came across. Oh, please. Oh, it's not what he said. Okay. I'm not a tweeter. Nah, it's okay, my friend. I'm teasing. I'm being half serious, half facetious. But over to you, my friend. Sorry for the interruption by Tandy Tobias Kapoor.
Thank you, Chair. The results that I'm presenting and talking to will probably allow July or August come back to this committee once SARS finalizes annual reports, but we saw it prudent as part of the agenda to give you a view of where we ended from a financial year and revenue collection point of view. You'd recall that we had a revised initial estimate of 1265 billion that we needed to collect, which was revised at MTBTS and was also revised in February, ultimately culminating into a 1217.3 billion that we needed to collect for the fiscus. As the organization, as at the 31st of March, we had collected 1216.5, which was a shortfall against the printed estimate, the revised estimate of 0.8 billion, which is 800 million, in percentage 10.1%. That represented a prior year growth of 6.3%, equivalent to 72.3 billion rands. The collections that we saw last year were marginally lower than the revised estimates, despite the fact that in the last two quarters of 2017 we saw a GDP growth of 3.1 and 2.3%, mainly driven by the agricultural sector. We also would like to report that we also saw an impact on the CIT in terms of the economic developments, and these were lower. And we believe that the economic developments have a lagging effect on our corporate income tax collections. And as such, we believe that going forward, we're likely to see the impact, full impact of the economic developments in as far as CIT is concerned. We also want to report back that our projections for dividend taxes were quite low. In fact, our performance was drastically affected by the projections on dividend tax, and you would appreciate that dividend tax is declared by entities based on economic performance and the profits that they are declaring. So we saw that hugely coming down in the year. VAT collections were below expectations, and this was quite a high effect on our revenue collection. PIT collections as well were lower than expectation, personal income tax, and this is mainly because of lower wage settlements, containment in bonus payments, as well as increasing unemployment inflation as well. We also note that there have been legislative changes in as far as retirement reforms, and these also accounted for the reduction in PIT collections. In the year of subdued global trade, nominal merchandise imports into South Africa revealed a negative growth of 0.1 year-on-year, and of course that this saw a decline in quarter four in terms of import VAT as well as customs revenue. In essence, in the next slide, we then show the performance of every tax product in our organization. We are reflecting the 0.1 negative variance, which totals to the 0.8 billion that I spoke about earlier. But we're also showing that year on year we've seen 6.3 growth. You would recall that in order to be able to meet our initial estimate, we should have grown by 10.6% in terms of revenue collection. But again, the 6.3 growth year-on-year is what we ended up with at the 31st of March. You will see that the personal income tax from a net perspective was slightly up by a marginal 0.1%, driven by PSUN, and drawn down by PIT refunds, as I said earlier on, that hinging mostly on the issues pertaining to the reforms on the retirement schemes. CIT, again, was negative at a marginal 0.2% at the net level, and VAT, again, was at a net level marginal lower at 0.4%. Again, I think it's important to show or to speak to the fact that the VAT performance, both at domestic and import level, was down substantially, driving the 0.4% decline against the revised estimate. I think it's important to note that 3.9 variance, negative variance, against the revised estimates in terms of dividend tax. And I think the committee will appreciate the hardship and the difficulty in forecasting for dividend tax. And from time to time, we want to be closer to the revised estimates, working with the tripartite party in the ROC committee, with the Reserve Bank as well as the National Treasury. But you will see that there is 1.1 billion underperformance on dividend taxes that affects the total number that we are reporting. Overall, as I indicated, Chair, the 6.3% growth year on year is what we are reporting. We are reporting 8.1% marginal underperformance against the revenue estimate. I will not speak to the economic factors that played out in the last financial year, but I will just go into the detail in terms of the numbers in as far as the underperforming areas in terms of the contribution. As I said, we saw 1.1 underperformance against the revised estimates in as far as dividend tax is concerned, and I think I've alluded to say in the prior year, 2016-2017, there was an anticipated increase in the dividend tax rate from 15 to 20%, and we saw an increase in terms of entities rushing to declare a dividend, and therefore there was an unusual spike in that year, which was not repeated in 2017-2018. And that plays itself in the 1.1 billion underperformance against the revenue, the revised estimate. Again, I've spoken to the fact that domestic VAT has been subdued. It's a consumption tax, and you'll appreciate that it's driven by a number of economic factors in as far as expenditure is concerned, domestic expenditure is concerned. We are reporting that the collections amounted to 336.3 billion for the financial year under review, which was a billion less than the revised estimate. And the performance has been subdued for 10 of the 12 months as far as the actual estimate monthly is concerned when it comes to domestic VAT. Import VAT, despite the fact that towards the latter part of the year, business confidence rose and the rate of exchange improved, we still were in a position where we saw import VAT being subdued. Concomitant to that, it's the custom duties that were also so subdued. And in total, import fell by a billion rands, which is 0.6% short of the revised estimate. And again, looking at some of our regions, if you look at what contributes the most there is machinery. And we saw quite a number of entities in the motor manufacturing space decreasing output or changing models up in the north. In Pretoria, one of our big tax contributors changed a model and is building up capacity and stock as we speak, and we're likely to see the impact of that being positive in the first quarter and the second quarter of this year. Again, I think it's important, Chair, that in the review of the performance, there are things that as an organization in the last financial year with the acting commissioner coming in that we probably stopped doing. We were concerned about grab forwards, or what we call grab forwards in terms of what we call 14 deferments, and we took a decision as EXCO to say for the month of March we will not do those grab forwards in terms of the customs environment. And of course that would have had an impact on where we end up in the month of March. And I think that decision allows us to re-baseline because I think EXCO has taken a decision that going forward we will desist from such grab forwards. In terms of areas that affected our performance negatively, as I stated, the VAT refunds were below by a billion in terms of the revised estimate. PIT collections as well. We're marginally higher by 0.3%, and custom duties also exceeded revised estimate by 100 million, due to increases in key chapters, vehicles, meat products, and rubber articles. We've gone on in the next slide to break down how we saw performance playing itself out in terms of the growth in the year. And we must state that in terms of the last quarter, we saw quite a sharp decline in performance in the month of March. You'll see in the red curve on the left, we dropped significantly from 9.5 in the month of February to 1.1. And as I indicated, there are some decisions that we had taken in the organization around 14 deferments and other related matters that saw us with that performance. But ultimately, in this slide, we are communicating that 6.3 growth year-on-year in terms of the revenue collected. Chair, I will end there and we'll take questions if there are any.
Chair, thanks to Johnston for that. And there's a lot of detail in there, and obviously in our annual report we'll give detail. But I do think, Chair, we need to acknowledge the work done. You know, our staff numbers have dropped now to 12,600. We have seen a significant drop, and it's been difficult times. Compliance is under pressure, and we're continuing to see compliance under pressure. We are finding many numbers of persons are not doing the right thing. Just in April, and I wanted to share this in the public domain, we have found over 14,000 VAT vendors have filed returns and not paid their VAT for the month in April. The total value of those returns was 1.1 billion rand. Now, we have put in place certain steps to make sure those people pay. But our teams are working in an environment where people are utilizing these amounts for cash flow purposes, and it is a serious concern. So compliance continues to be a concern, and we need to guard against it, the non-submission of returns, late submission of returns, filing returns without payment. It continues to be an issue. I need to put on the table, in light of earlier discussions, but we are extremely concerned with any audits that are called into question. And if that is so, how does SARS rely on the audit to ensure the tax is correctly paid? So compliance overall is under serious threat. And it's something that is seriously exercising us as an EXCO as to how we take it forward. And we are looking for every opportunity, and one of them is the illicit financial flows, which we need to get a grasp on, which we'll talk to later. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Over to members. Tanya.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I need to declare up front I'm not a tax expert, so the gentleman who just presented, you will have to bear with me. He gives me all these titles and I'll be in trouble. I need a perspective about what drives real household consumption so that we juxtapose it with the economic performance. Because you don't get an idea that even if the economy is growing, household consumption get influenced by that. And I'm saying this because if you look at what you said in relation to the import VAT, even against confidence boosting, it did not perform in such a way that you can say that has had an influence. So even that, we need to understand what really influenced that. But I also need to know what is this 14 deferments and the grab forwards and how they impact on the whole system. And lastly, I thought that the dividend tax will perform differently in this financial year. But like I said, I'm not a tax expert. I might be, not so good to understand how what drives that. So given the fact that there are different rates applied in different fiscal years, do you see us getting back to the 20% rate, between 15 and 20% rate again to get a better performance, or what's going to happen? Because what you reported in the last financial year showed it going up. Now, I always comment about the models that we use to determine the performance of the economy, but in this context, I want to use the performance of the model to determine whether there will be a shortfall or not. I know I'm giving you a very difficult policy challenge, but I want us to always be ahead of it. For instance, if the shortfall has gone up to 8 billion, which you say, is it 1% or not 0.1%? Is it not 0.1%? So, and what you determined earlier was something different from the real shortfall. Is the projections, is it possible to do them in such a way that it can help you to project almost correctly, to influence how GDP growth is going to be projected by National Treasury when they do their projections? You get the drift. Yeah. So that it influences how we look at that going forward. And I'm saying this because members are getting involved robustly in how we do projections. And in the future, you'll be challenged on the basis of the projections that you'll be made, be it collections or shortfalls or a GDP growth generally. So it's based on that I want us to find a model that can assist. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, the Tandy has already raised the explain what is meant by the grab forwards and the defer. Yeah, I think I understand, and I think it's a great move, but I'd love to hear the detail. Mr. Chairman, the figures speak for themselves. So my only other question might well irritate the Commissioner, but it's one of my favourite ones, and that's the content of these pro forma letters that are sent out to taxpayers, and there was a commitment that these would be kind of revised and made, be written in simple English. And what progress have we made with that? I know it's probably not an easy task, but I'd love to just hear that, yes, something's happening. Thank you.
Can you take Honourable Lisa half day salary every time you ask a tax related question that's going to serve his clients?
I'm going to ask that Johnston maybe deal with the issues of household consumption, etc. But let me just deal with the issue of pull forwards or grab forwards, etc. Customs is paid on a deferment basis, and you are collecting it normally over 13 periods. We've got 13 deferments. You could ask for a further. It's not a payment. It's pulling money forward, which we would normally only get in the next month. So pay as you earn, for instance, is due on the 7th of the month, next month, so let's say the 7th of April. Most government departments, we encourage them, because it's government money, to pay by the end of March, although it's only due on the 7th. And that's what is being alluded to in this process. So it's money already probably due, but legally, if you go look at the letter of the fourth schedule to the Tax Act, pays you earn only due on the 7th, but we ask government to pay. SARS, for instance, pays its pays you earn by the end of the previous month. We don't have to, but it's the right thing to do, and that's what we're about. Correct, but it's only once off, and you can't roll it.
So can I make a follow-up, because there was a reason why I asked that question.
Yeah.
I did not ask it because I don't understand what is to defer. It is because at some point the ombudsperson said that when you... There was an instance where SARS was supposed to do reimbursements, and you withheld those because of deferment. Is it because of that?
No, that's nothing to do with the two. That was a different matter. The Ombud is here, actually, the chief officer of the Ombud. He can maybe respond, but that is not related to that.
You don't do it in this transaction?
No.
Oh.
Not at all in terms of this. Chair, if I may just quickly deal with the issue of dividends tax.
Shall we bring the ombudsman up? Have you taken a decision, colleagues, that every meeting of SARS, the ombudsman will be here, and he's a statutory role in place, he has a right to reply. I'm sure Tandy's forgotten. Give us a note.
I don't forget everything, Chair.
Who is this person? Why is he here? Moving it, right?
Thank
she moves it, nothing you don't know. She's half my age, but she forgets twice as much.
Thank you.
you, Chair. The issue that was raised by the Office of the Tax Ombud was refunds that were meant to be released and would not be released, and with certain assessments being raised against those specific refunds, and specifically that's the issue that we raised, which worried us.
Chair, just in terms of dividends tax, the member rightfully said that she expected it to perform differently. I think we all hope that, but companies' behavior in dividends payments is baffling. And we are seeing, even in April, we are seeing differences in what we expected on dividends tax. It's an extremely difficult thing to estimate. And it depends on confidence within the country. People are wanting to invest, then they don't pay dividends as much. And that obviously has a direct impact. So there's various factors. So to estimate that, and I don't know if the DDG's got a view of how you really can estimate dividends tax, but in our estimation, it is not possible to do it properly. You base it on the previous year, but in the last 2 years, it hasn't worked very well on that side. Just in terms of the pro formas, Chair, we've got some good news, and I'd like my colleague, the Acting Chief Officer of Business and Individual Tax, Mr. Fabian Murray, to please inform the committee.
Okay, thank you. Chair, so with regards to the letters, or the generic letters that we normally send out when we alert a taxpayer for an audit, and last year on PIT we had about 1.6 million audits or alerts, and each of those 1.6 million taxpayers would then have received a generic letter requesting supporting documentation. Now, whilst we're acutely aware that the letter is generic, and it was intentionally done when we implemented it, because we want the taxpayer to provide all supporting documents, and you'll be amazed at with the supporting documents that we get, the additional under disclosure that we're actually able to detect from that. However, having said that, clearly over the last few years there has been an outcry with regards to supporting documents and the generic basis on which we request that. So for this year, I'm delighted to say that we've analyzed the audits, and of the 1.6 million audits that was generated last year, just under half of it related to a specific one risk alert. Okay? So what we are doing this year is that for those audits, we are only alerted for one specific risk alert. You will get a very specific request for supporting documents. So it will state that we are requiring supporting documents with regards to medical aid, or we are requiring supporting documents with regards to travel allowance. And that would then take care of about 50% of the audit cases. So I think that's a positive step in the right direction. It is something that we'll continuously review. As you can imagine, when you do have multiple alerts, it does become a bit more complicated. But I think it's definitely a step in the right direction, and 50% of the tax base that was audited should get a more specific letter this year. Thank you.
Okay.
Only the questions you ask.
Fine.
Yeah, well, just you wait until Nati flexes his muscle. He's new here. Yeah, although he's carrying his legacy from the police badly into this era. I'm worried about the effect he's going to have on other AFC members. Okay, for those of you who don't understand, the former minister was obviously being facetious, right? Otherwise, it'll appear on the first page of the newspaper, is what you said. All right, okay. Yes, please. Yeah, I'm boiling too. Thank you, you're so kind. Yeah, but has Mr. Mania approved of that? Yeah, you better contact Mr. Mania. He may not have approved. Right, over to you, my friend.
Thank you, Chair. What drives household consumption is a number of factors. One of them is indebtedness of the households. and you would have probably seen in the business day a number of 1.76 trillion to the tune of which the South Africans are indebted by. So the higher the indebtedness, consumption is affected because you want to service your debt. Secondly, the rise of household income and the rate at which it rises affects consumption. So if the wage bill is not rising at a fast enough rate, consumption will be affected. So it's a unemployment affects consumption of households. So it's a number of things, that factors that we, in the macro economy, we look at to see what affects consumption. We can have a detailed conversation on that.
Well, that's basic information as studied in economics, but in the South African context, what drives the consumption of South African household consumption has not necessarily been that. You find people actually getting more deeper into debt, even when the income is not on the positive. So I've seen people who will put themselves deeply in debt, and so I did not ask it for the literal answer. I asked it for Arun.
I cannot speak to consumer behavior and consumer psychology. I'll defer for that one.
So can we
answer this one question? So in terms of the modeling, and the DDG is here, the assumptions that are made in terms of what affects our performance in the estimate, you would all be aware that currently we are projecting 1345 as the performance. Embedded in that is certain tax policy assumptions. You would know that there is 1% VAT adjustment, which is mooted to contribute around 23 billion rands and other reforms. However, if you understand that VAT is a consumption-driven tax type, you need now to follow what consumption does from month 1 through to month 12, so that you are able to look at the 23 billion and it manifesting or not manifesting. So we are working hard to say, what are the monthly changes in some of the underlying factors that affect that estimate? And I think it's important that monthly view be done, because we don't want to get to MTBPS or to February and we start talking about some of these underlying assumptions that didn't materialize that affected the estimate. And we are working in our revenue analysis teams with other stakeholders as well to be able to track on a monthly basis some of these assumptions and how they are panning out in terms of the actual revenue collected. I must say that if an organization does not reflect internally around issues of its own efficiencies, you are not playing fair and honest. As an organization, we also continue to look at our internal efficiencies. We've run program around a special voluntary disclosure program in the past year that served us well. We focused on debt management in terms of clawing back on the debt book, and we looked at a number of other issues, even outstanding returns. These are internal efficiencies that you want to look into as an organization, because it's a continuous improvement process. And if you assume that there are no inefficiencies that you need to deal with, you would be disingenuous. Thank you.
So, that's my last time. I'm not going to come back. The question that I did not ask, in any event that the mooted 23 billion that needs to be collected through the 1% VAT increase that is suggested, if we happen to reverse it, there's going to be an impact on what your projections are in the current conjuncture. So in relation to the state of preparedness, what are we going to do? Because neither PIT or CIT is going to yield any good results in moving forward. So is there anything that you... I don't know if it's a tax matter that you Momo want to respond to, but I'm talking to now those who are doing projections, not necessarily the math and science going forward in terms of the real projections that you're going to make to address the 23 billion shortfall and probably even getting more. I'm trying to advance an argument going forward as and when we're going to engage on these issues of the money bill, as to how I'm going to juxtapose this issue, given what the impact on the tax collection is going to be. So we'll need to be assisting that.
19:30. Yeah, fine. Just like you, she's entitled to ask questions. Are you finished? Yeah, good. Okay. Do you want to say anything else? Yeah, Treasury?
Chair, I think just on revenue projections, we have a committee called the Revenue Analysis Working Group made up of SARS, Reserve Bank, and the Treasury. In fact, two divisions of the Treasury. So they always, certainly for the MTPPS and the budget, they need to update the revenue analysis. Just generally, though, with tax, you know, it's not worth after 1 or 2 months to even project what's happening. You kind of got to wait for at least a quarter, because especially your corporate taxes are paid every quarter. And I think issues like the dividends tax, that really was a once-off. Before it took effect, people, to dodge the tax, to put it bluntly, all said they had declared, especially if they were not listed entities. That's why you saw 5 or 6 billion that came in. I think with regard to any projections like on VAT and so on, there is the Money Bills Procedure Act that we also have to look at. But I mean, if there is a shortfall, it does mean we have to come up with revenue sources.
Illicit financial flows and illicit tobacco trade. Maybe you can deal with both at the same time. Yeah. And secondly, just to alert you, this is a standard feature. Every quarter you've got to report on it. I spoke to you over the phone. You heard what we said in the House yesterday across all political parties. So we want to know what progress since the last time you appeared before our committee.
Chair, I think up front I need to acknowledge that while certain work is being done, SARS has not been efficiently tackling the scourge of illicit financial flows, illicit tobacco, and other illicit trade. We have to upfront acknowledge that to the committee. There's so much more that we can be doing in order to give the FISC the necessary resources. I need to acknowledge as well, though, that many skilled resources remain in our organization that have the ability to do this. They are scattered in various areas of our organization, but we are committed as an exco to ensure that we re-establish such teams as soon as possible so that we can move forward in a far more structured manner than we've been doing in the recent past insofar as these aspects are concerned. I think it's also very important up front to say that we are having...
Are you reading from a text?
I'm just reading a preamble to the presentation which we have presented. I just wanted to introduce this. Some preliminary engagements have also occurred with banks insofar as reconciling advance payments with imported goods. What was worrying to me is the levels of reconciliation. Now, just to explain this to the members, if I may, Chair, if I import a container of goods, I send an advance payment out. That container then comes back. You need to match the two transactions, or else there could be a fictitious import. And that is my concern. The banks in our engagement indicated that there's certain steps we could put in place, and we are engaging them to try and help them in that process of that reconciliation. Because it's easy to order a fictitious order, pay the amount abroad, and it's gone, and we know no better, without reconciling that the goods actually arrive. And we've got to do this. We've got to do it properly. We're not doing it properly today, and the banks are going to help us in that regard in the process. If I may just go quickly to the presentation, Chair, and I'm going to go to page 2 just as back. Chair. I've got the wrong presentation in front of me. I'm going to get it the right one. Subsequent to the parliamentary hearing on May 2017 relating to the illicit financial flows and the Financial Intelligence Centre, the Financial Intelligence Centre called a meeting of the various government agencies to create a coordinating forum on illicit financial flows. It needs to be noted that in February 2018, the terms of reference for the coordinating forum was drafted and approved, resulting in an inter-agency working group for illicit financial flows.
Two levels of illicit financial flow coordination have been created through the terms of reference, namely the Operational Interagency Working Group and the Task Working Group. The Working Committee is responsible for overall coordination, and I think I can just confirm with my FIC colleague, if he's still here, he's not here at the moment, is that is meeting on Friday. While the Task Working Group is responsible for the receipt and selection of cases requiring multi-agency disciplinary approach. The next slide I'm not going to go through, it's just a bit of detail as to the working of the committee, and the FIC has briefed Parliament. I'm not sure, Chair, which forum was briefed on this, but I thought it would be wise because we are participating, and this is one of the key drivers, is inter-agency cooperation. Just to deal with the adopted working definition, an illicit financial flow is defined as the illegal movement of money or capital from one country to another when the funds are illegally earned, transferred, or utilized. It's very interesting, committee, that tax is not indicated there, which is a worrisome thing for us. Now, this comes out of the OECD model of illicit financial flows, and we would like tax to be on the agenda with illicit financial flows, but that's something we've got to take forward. The definition therefore covers various aspects in relation to the movement. Illegally earned, as in drug trafficking, fraud or theft, this will fall within the legislative framework relating to the proceeds of crime, poker. And just for the record, when poker applies and there's a poker investigation underway, secrecy is set aside and we can give full cooperation. And just to, and it's in light of everything we've been discussing about confidentiality today, it's important there's let out and there's not let out in certain cases. Legally earned but illegally transferred. This falls within the legislative framework relating to exchange control and would typically relate to fraudulent documentation being presented or non-declaration of cash in the case of cash mules. I just want to pause there a second. Our engagement with the Reserve Bank, we have people abusing the 1 million exit amount which is allowed annually. Where people, Mark would go to Johnston, I'd go to Makhola, I'd go to Fabian, and I get each of them to take a million abroad for me because it's under, there's no tax clearance requirement because we wouldn't cope with the volume for that, and the funds then flow offshore. We need to get a grip of those things. I believe some of the transactions even happen via some of these currency traders that we find in malls. So we need to get a grip on those transactions, and the Reserve Bank has indicated they were more than happy to work with us, but we need to action this now, Chair. I think the time has stopped that we need to talk about it, we need to really action it. Case selection criteria for the interagency collaboration, this is just to put on the table. Cases must fall within the definition of illicit financial flows. Minimum financial threshold is 100 million rand in this context. So the But the trouble is many 1 millions can make up that 100 million before you can say boo or bar. Minimum of 3 investigative agencies involvement and any other significant matter which falls out the case selection criteria. That's just a general catch-all. Now, very importantly, committee and chair, there are currently 9 cases identified for a multi-agency, multidisciplinary approach. The total estimated financial flows in relation to these 9 cases is 9 billion rand. It's significant. Our team within case selection, which resorts under the Chief Officer Fabian Murray, is busy engaging and evaluating these cases. And we are seriously concerned by what we are seeing. Now, just go back to case selection, which I indicated earlier. Mr. Murray's team will be doing the case selection. It will get to a point the case will be created. An audit case will be created. And Ms. McCullough's team and the investigative audit or criminal investigations, depending on it, would commence the audit and be part of that audit process. Both of their respective teams are involved in this working group, and that is starting to work well. I have this week, Chair, met with the head of the FIC, and we've given a commitment to each other to improve our cooperation significantly. And that we really reap the benefits of the legislation that's already in place. The next slide may be seen as trivialities in terms of the broader when we speak of 9 billion rand, Chair, but during the period 1 March 17 to 27 March 18, there are 21 cash seizures. This is at ports of entry.
It's amounting to 79 million. During the period of 1 April to 8 May, there was one cash seizure of 7 million rand, and cash was a combination of rand, US dollars, pounds, and euro. Most of the 22 seizures to date, 13 seizures, took place at OR Tambo. It should be noted that cash couriers are a specific focus of the IAWG. Chair, I think it would be remiss to say we've got this under control. We have got dogs specifically trained, but they are limited. You can't get to every suitcase that is going abroad. And obviously you've got to be very selective as to how you do it, and it needs to have a very focused intervention. So those are things we need to improve on. And Chair, I cannot come and say today I'm going to get you a billion rand through the cash couriers today. I'd be lying. But all I want to assure the committee is we are going to seek ways to improve this. The next slide, Chair, is probably a bit disconcerting to me as the commissioner, because it may seem that we're doing very little in one regard. During the period 1 April to 17 to 30 April 18, the FIC referred a number of cases to us. 379 to be exact have been received, an associated value of 2 billion rand. Of these 379 cases, SARS has dealt with 16% of them to date. 20 cases have been referred to investigative audit, in other words, 5%. 6 cases have been completed with a yield of, and I'm saying only 1.8 million, but that's the yield, and it's better than nothing. 108,000 has been banked, so it's nothing significant as yet, but it's work in progress. 21 cases have been referred to the outstanding returns for collection of outstanding returns. And Chair, this is an ongoing issue that we find with people who seek to evade. They don't file returns. We will have to come to a point that we're going to be issuing far more what we call estimated assessments, where we just guess based on the facts that we have. When there's no other better estimate, we base it on an estimate of all the information and we raise it. It is a challenging environment because people say, well, how did you arrive at this? But our compliance model is based on people filing a return. They don't do that. We have to go to other measures, and that is estimating people's liability. So if this continues, this trend, Ms. Makhola and myself will be taking serious action to just simply raise estimated assessments. The risk that we have is uncollectible, maybe, and that you sit with our debt book ballooning on the other side. And that's our challenge continually. But we can raise assessments, and we will be doing it. 19 cases were deemed to have low risk. So coming back to case selection, not every case is investigated. And then 178 cases are busy, in the process, 47%. But what I do want to indicate, 141 of those cases were received in March and April of this year. So significantly more in the last period. And I think that we are starting to focus more as raising the attention, and I think we're going to see results here, Chair. I think it is important, Chair, that we highlight the difference between transfer pricing, BEPS, and illicit financial flows, because there's a lot of confusion. But all lead to some erosion of our tax base. And illicit financial flows, I gave the definition earlier. I don't need to repeat that. BEPS is defined as tax avoidance strategies that exploit gaps and mismatches in tax rules to artificially shift profits to low or no tax locations. Transfer pricing, on the other hand, is broadly described as the process or methodology used in setting of the price of goods and services sold between controlled or related legal entities within an enterprise which in principle should match either what the seller should charge, an independent arm's length customer, or what the buyer should pay, an independent arm's length supplier. There's a whole lot of rules, and if I recall correctly, we've got how many people focused on transfer pricing? 18. 18 people focused on transfer pricing. Chair, you're asking what we're doing. I think in BEPS it's important that we just give some figures to you. And for the last 4 years, you can see the results of cases and the cash results there. So as I have it, and Fabian, just correct me if I'm wrong,
We've raised in 2018 13.8 billion rands worth of assessment for BEPS. It's significant. So far, SARS has managed to collect 2.2. As is to be expected, many of these cases are in the legal process, with some assessments, a couple of assessments make up a vast majority of that 13 billion. So there is work being done, Chair. We need now to yield the cash result for the fisc, and that is how we have to translate that and get that on the table. On trade mispricing, SARS actions so far, SARS has done empirical research, and it's very high-level, Chair, so SARS has obtained technical and senior counsel opinions on the findings from the research undertaken. SARS has identified prevalence of certain presumably trade mispriced transactions, and we're looking at certain key industries in this regard, which I won't be divulging today. SARS is currently busy with a pilot audit case to test the veracity of the research. We believe that if we can get this right with a pilot, we can roll it out. What we're wanting, Minister Gordon, a number of years ago with the banks, when the effective tax rate was hovering around 4 or 5%, and I think it may have been Minister Manuel, called them to account, and we saw a significant shift in the effective tax rate of these entities. We believe we're going to get to a point that we need to start calling industries and say, guys, this is what we're finding. Go get your house in order. And try and drive voluntary compliance. And that is what we would prefer, because I don't have significant capacity to investigate all these cases. I need voluntary compliance in this. But we're going to use both methodologies, and we need to empower our audit teams in this regard. Once it's okay, let me jump to the next slide. And this was in a response to Parliament, Chair. I don't know if they got received it. A question was asked, I think, by the committee chair with regards to Project Honey Badger. And historically, SARS's Project Honey Badger was managed under the unit called National Projects. National Projects brought about the integration and coordination of various capabilities and dedicated teams to focus on specific areas of the illicit economy. Now, I mention it historically, Chair, because these units were predominantly dissolved. And it's an important aspect. There are some capabilities. The staff are in our environment. Customs, special criminal investigations, audit, investigative audit. SARS is currently only one dedicated function focusing on the tobacco industry. We call it the Integrated Audit Tobacco Team. Bit of information is given there. A total of 8 members, which is very insignificant. It does a cross audit. It does both customs and tax and excise. It goes across the areas. SARS wants to re-establish teams to focus on illicit activities. The time has come. We have to. And we recognize the shortcomings in our processes in that regard. Chair, very importantly, the automatic exchange of information has also come in the last year. And SARS has been an early adopter of AEOI, as it's called. The first data was received in the latter half of 2017, and we're still in the early stage of evaluating that data. We're hearing from the U.S. Context that the matching result is quite high. Whether that is going to result in on our side, it's too early to tell. But the whole point is, if we can enable our case selection teams to have as much information as possible, they are far more greatly empowered that we are only focusing on the truly the cases that where there's going to yield the result, because that is what we have to do. We can't just focus on every case. Ms. McCullough's team is too small to just audit everybody. I wish we could. Just in conclusion, Chair, steps have been taken by SARS to curb the illicit outflows. I indicated that earlier. Steps have been taken to improve the interagency collaboration, and I do want to put on record my thanks to the FIC for coordinating this meeting. I think it's gone a long way since your meeting that we are seeing now progress at last. And we must develop on this, and it's a regular meeting, and it shouldn't just be a meeting. The cases must now be created and generated. Such cases are based on the agreed case selection criteria,
And it's going to go beyond just illicit financial flows. It will include the tobacco trade. And very importantly, we mustn't think illicit flows or illicit trade is linked to only tobacco. We have fuel industry in the same thing, with cross-border fuel transactions happening. We have gold leaving our country. We need to make sure that if 100 million rands worth of gold is going, that it is genuinely going, because I'm refunding VAT on that. Those are the things that we have to get a grip on, and we need the ability to identify these transactions and properly focus. So SARS, and I'm going to be stating here, we are setting up these multidisciplinary teams. They're not in place today other than the one team, Jay. That concludes my presentation.
And that's questions, comments, Tandi?
General, I'm very happy with the presentation. That's why I wanted Fred to stay, because when he goes to the chamber, he's going to say something else. And I wanted him to concentrate on the figures. But there's something that I need to share. And I wish the Hawks were here, in a way. Because sometimes cases get delayed from the criminal justice side in terms of the work that you guys have done. But when we focus on this, I suspect cash couriers are going to do conversions. Now that you're catching them when they're couriering cash, they will convert illicit financial flows into products and commodities so that when they reach on the other side, they will have evaded. So they're going to be smart and change their methods of how they deal with that. So we need teams that are going to be alive to that. For argument's sake, if you say R1 million is tax-free, they will export products to that value and make sure that when it arrives on the other end, you know, it's not in the form of cash, but in the form of something else. So these teams should always be proactive to deal with it. But I know from your side you're doing the hard work. I'm worried about the justice system side as to how it brings matters to finality. Secondly, if your currently you're looking at ports of entries in relation to airports, and maybe I'm belaboring the point, I'll continuously lament this point. We lost the border management authority, you see. I don't know how, but this is the easiest way to bring illicit flows as compared to your in a flight. Flights are well checked and so on. That part, the broken fence somewhere in between and so on, I don't know. I need to be helped to think. I can't think beyond this. I'll keep on lamenting it until SARS fights and fights.
We are very sympathetic to this thing. Apparently it's coming back to Parliament.
Yeah, no.
This will be amazing.
I'll keep on doing this.
No, you're right. We as a committee, I think across all parties agree, Tandi, don't relent. Think of the SACP. We're still struggling for world socialism. Without
this will be a dream come true, I promise you. This is not like
your
dream.
Up. BMA is easier than the World Proletarian Revolution. Ask Nazi when he was in his previous life. Okay, Mr. Lees, you don't have any questions? It's shocking. Okay, fine. Can I say a few quick things? Now, obviously, in the ANC, we encourage people to speak their mind, and obviously, we have differences of emphasis. And so, what I say doesn't necessarily mean that other ANC members will agree, but within a broad framework, we can disagree. So I think given the staggering amounts that are being taken out of this country, the estimates are horrific. What Minister Godan said the other day is not the figure given. So firstly, can you give us a ballpark figure? Now, I know it's difficult by its very nature, but surely you can give us some ballpark figure. Between how many billion are we losing? Like the Global Financial Integrity gives figures. I know it's 122 billion between 2002 and I think 2012. Dollars, my brother. And you know what the Mbeki Commission, so to speak, said. 50 billion leaves this continent, more than we get in development aid. And when you go to these parliamentary conferences, I've been to one actually, the figure there that they said, Tandi, you remember, is not 50. They think it's closer to 80 billion. We can never know the amount. But surely you have some ballpark figure to work on. First question. Second question is,
You see, you set up these structures, we welcome it, right? But we want to see outcomes. Now, while I think Tandy is correct, well, Tandy and I can disagree, while we welcome this report, and we think there's a slightly more precise and useful summary and presentation made today, it's less evasive. And frankly, we appreciate the candor. When you say, look, we've like, so to speak, dropped the ball, what are we going to do more, and hold us to account, then you warm our hearts. You know, we say, okay, look, people are being frank, rather than being evasive. So welcome the candor. But at the same time, honesty to a committee is not enough. We want results. So we would like you next time to tell us, look, on trade mispricing, this cannot continue. Obviously, you talk about the legal tax, what's it, avoided, and the illegal tax evasion. Is that correct? Right. So we understand that BEPS is not strictly speaking illegal. We understand that trade mispricing is not strictly speaking illegal, right? It's a question you've been... But on trade mispricing, you're doing some work. When are you going to finish this work? Next question, right? When are you going to bring it to us? And maybe we do it in a collective meeting, Tandy, with the other four committees, right? Hard as it is, we'd like to do this before the end of the year. Tevo, will you note that? And in prep, put some pressure on me to convene such a meeting with my co-chairs, right? Then, on the issue of this agency, this intersectional agency, do you have like a collective overall strategy and program? In other words, what we get often is, yeah, we met today, meeting next week. Meetings are empirical statements. Meetings are a means to an end. What we want is the end. Now, you increase, not you, your minister, that man and his minister, increased VAT by 1%. And I would like to... that man, the one there. Floyd's friend. Now, what we would like to say, Mr. Kingon, Commissioner, Acting Commissioner, what we want to say is, you know what? You cannot justify increasing VAT by 1%. The government, I mean, you're just implementing. You cannot, as a government, justify. This is a view of the committee. New members, please note this. I'm not saying anything new. They're free to disagree, though, because they knew that nothing stops them. It's the view of this committee. It's not justifiable to increase VAT, the fuel levy, which is very destructive also, right? And at the same time, as people say to you, you know, when I'm confronted by the media, I don't wriggle away from it. I cannot lie. The ANC has not taught me to lie. They say, Mr. Karim, you're saying you want $22.9 billion from VAT. Why don't you just get the money from illicit financial? Why don't you look at this one family, the Gupta family? How much have they taken, right? Why don't we just get it back? To which my reply is, you're right. Yeah, and collect. Then I use the argument that the government uses, which is correct. You're not going to get that money overnight, right? It's going to take years and years. I mean, established democracies have failed to get the money back that they owed, right? So I understand all this. So we can't wait on that money. But you see, we can't morally justify this. This committee, more than government, has to ensure that the money comes back. And we're going to hound you. Hound you. Not you personally, SARS and government and FIC, wherever you are. We're going to hound you. That money must come back. Too much is going out of this country. So the moral and political case has never been stronger, Mr. Kingon. I'm not putting the pressure on you alone. We've all said, she's right. You know what we find? Nutty, what we do is, Peggy, we bring the four committees together. Police, trade and industry, our committee, and mineral resources. But given this horrific year, we haven't done it in the first. We do twice a year, that meeting, and then once quarter we meet with them. So in the next quarter we'll be having that four-person. So we're going to do it. But we are pleading with you that you do much, much more. Thank you.
I think that's too early for me to answer to, and I must concur with you that a collective strategy is what's needed, not just a talk shop, and I'm not comfortable to stand up here and say I've got one yet. We will make sure that there is a collective strategy. Just in terms of the broader things, you know, the FIC's report refers to 192 billion US, and I don't know which period it is, leaving Africa as a whole.
I think it's annually.
So, but that's Africa. Well, it's in a presentation of theirs. We can make...
Can you send it to Tebogo or to Alan?
So, I think... we are scratching the surface. I think we need to acknowledge that. But, Chair, I'm going to put my head out here a little bit. I am constrained with my capacity. And at the moment, I've got 12,600 staff. We were at one stage over 14,000. And if we don't invest into that, delivery might suffer in terms of this. So we understand and we need to cut our cloth at the moment to fit, and we are doing that. And we are trying to give Ms. Makgola specifically as many resources as we can. It's both in the IT development space and in the space related to enforcement actions, and case selection is where it's critically needed to ensure that we deliver. So if we continue to be constrained, it's going to be difficult. But it does not, we're going to do what we can within the framework we've got. And we are engaging Treasury in that regard.
Oh, yes, my friend.
You mentioned that you want the money to come back. Obviously, that's first prize, but we do have challenges in the recovery of assets. We need assistance from other countries. Last month, we were doing an investigation into a taxpayer who's involved in... We were investigating a taxpayer who's involved in the illicit gold industry. We asked for information from a particular jurisdiction, and we didn't receive that assistance. Yeah, and we ended up having to release a refund. So that's some of the constraints that we're dealing with. It's beyond our control. We can only ask and operate in the context of the agreement that we've entered into with these countries. So that's a challenge.
It's difficult, we know. And I do present the government and SARS line, because it's legitimate. You can't get the money overnight. But can we just say that, look, you don't have staff, right? But in theory, for a person who got an E in arithmetic, maybe it's a stupid thing to say, right? Because I'm no expert. If you raise more money, you can pay the staff. You know, it's like, you know, I know you can't do this, but let's say philosophically I would say, why don't you appoint people, right, and give them a commission? So for every $1 billion they raise, they get like 5%, right, or something.
You are asking mathematicians to use the philosophy.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, I'm saying I've got an E in arithmetic, I'm through confession time, and so on, right? Now, an E in maths or whatever, an E in physics, and so on. Now, the thing I'm saying is, you know, ideally, I'm being serious, Momo. Is there no way, you're a mathematician, right? So, Tandi, that might console you. Is there no way you can appoint more staff, right, who will pay for their own salaries by raising the money? That's all I'm saying. No answer now, but think about it. Secondly, Mr. Kingon, Commissioner, Acting Commissioner, can you please, when you come here in the next quarter, put in your report how far you've gone towards evolving a strategy, which the Minister will have to approve of in some way, and what the elements are of it. So we want a strategy and we want outcomes and a program that's clear over time, over the next 6 months, over the next 2 quarters. Ismail?
They're going to give you figures. These are applied mathematics. They will give you what they've done, not what they think they can do.
Chair, I think with great respect, the worst thing you can do is to give SARS officials a percentage of what they collect. Then you're going to find they're going to find money which is not due to it. So to just have one... Yeah.
Why can't you have more staff and you'll be getting more money anyway?
But
they get paid.
But I think that
by the money you get from illicit financial flows, that's the point.
It does need to be sufficiently resourced. And I think Mike was also being, was being kind. Part of the reason, the capacity to collect, I mean, he said it's fallen. Because the earlier discussion is the reason why it's fallen. The appetite was mental. For illicit flows, there wasn't a stomach to do it. If anything, maybe some people close their eyes deliberately. Okay. Those are the things that need... So if you look at the decline in revenue, obviously we're sorting that part out, and hopefully, and I'm sure that there'll be a need for resources, but one can have a constructive engagement when clearly there's the will to collect, which I think, on the mark, you are seeing a change from what was the past before March 19th.
Right. Okay, but we're going to hold you to account, right?
is a word we want to see delivery, right? Good. The next thing then is Floyd had made a proposal. Tandia, just think this through. See, Floyd made a very reasonable proposal that if you're looking at all these issues, and in a way you open the door again, Momo, by saying what you just said, right? Shouldn't this presidential commission expand its terms of reference? Now, I realize the practical issues. One, A, you cannot clutter it with too many issues. And illicit financial flows, I'm sorry he's not here, but somehow Thibault will have to brief him. Or he says, you've got an EFF researcher, he has EFF researcher. Now you're going to get the chance. So basically, let me put this to you. Tony, just think about it. So I would like to suggest, because time's running out, that we say, look, we accept the idea that there will be some form of massive inquiry into illicit financial flows. But to clutter this presidential commission with it may be inappropriate. But that we, you see, the other reason is your commission is about to be established in the next 48 hours. It's too late to make representations to the president. It will in any case be implicit in some of the issues you are dealing with. Or do members feel that we should ask that the terms of reference can always be expanded a week later or whatever? What do members feel? But before we reply, I'm just being fair to Floyd. He's not here, but I have to represent his point of view. I'm giving you options. I'm not taking a position. So firstly, just deal with the practicalities, Momo, and then Tandi can give a view.
For any commission, the president can always adjust the terms of reference. He's done that with the Zondo Commission as well. But I think that what I would just say, why don't we wait and see what the terms of reference are. We are just as anxious to see. So once the president has gazetted it, which hopefully is going to be, as I said, very shortly, then I think you can see if there's anything missing. You're always free to make suggestions.
Okay, let's say the president doesn't refer to IFFs explicitly, or it's not implicit in the other work that terms of reference refer to. Do you think it's feasible to, that's your view, do you think it's feasible to include this in that presidential commission, call it that?
I think, Chair, if it's related to SARS, okay, because you've got different skill sets, I would imagine. So certainly with SARS, I actually think, and if you saw in my presentation, I was hoping there were, even within, I think, from what I've seen of the term, because we were obviously consulted, I think that there's space for them to look at it as it relates to SARS.
Can I make a proposal? You tell me what you think of the proposal. All right, speak before.
I need to caution ourselves that as we do so, we need to look at the financial implications of the work that we want to put as, and package here so that, because we are the ones who need to find that money at the end of the day. And given the challenges, so we need to first allow the process to happen, gauge what's going to be the financial implication, and come back to trigger it as and when we're moving forward. Starting with the most important and urgent ones and following. So, and also giving him the latitude to, you know, to have space to look at everything, including what we recommended before. So it's on the basis of that, Chair, that I caution us to at least take a step back and then get in, because there's going to be financial implications and then we'll have to find the money. And they need to also take certain decisions aside in the process. So allow them space to do that and come to us with a recommendation, then we'll look into that. I don't know if it covers you.
I'm just asking, if you're talking about financial implications, you're saying that if we expand the terms of reference, the cost of the commission will be greater because they're looking at yet another big issue. Is that what you're saying?
Chair, it's not only the cost of the commission. There's teams that need to be established. You see, those teams need to have salaries. They need to have time frames. They need to operate, they need to know whether they are operating on a full-time or on a temporary basis. And they've got specialized skills. They are not your average teams. So this is what I'm trying.
Okay, the question I'm asking then, will it be agreeable that we say as an outcome of today's discussion, when we issue that media statement everybody says we should do, we say that at some appropriate stage, consideration, we're not saying it should be done, consideration should be given. That means we're making it loose, right? At some appropriate stage, if necessary, consideration could be given. We can say could be given, not should be given. Could be given to exploring the possibilities of the commission looking into illicit financial flows. The SARS management of illicit financial flows. So it's a loose formulation. It's a guide to the... So we don't come back and discuss this thing. Then 6 weeks down the road, if something comes up, then we say, okay, we took a decision. Now let's review it. Do you want to change it, or do you want to now say it's not cool, we're suggesting it? So at least the thing is not hanging in the air, and we're not going to start the discussion again.
Can you please... Can you release me?
No, the meeting is supposed to finish at 13:30, as agreed.
Chair, please, can I be released?
Yeah, okay, you know, you can be released, but the decisions of the committee obtained. I want some guidance before you leave, because the two members are relatively new. You've been here for the whole four and a half years. I'm just asking for guidance. If you say no, it's no.
I'm not saying no for anything.
So can I have a loose formulation from the committee that I can say something like this on our behalf, that at some if it is necessary,
we agree.
Consideration could be given.
Yeah.
To explore the possibility of including.
You know, you studied English in the UK. I don't know why you want us to...
I don't study English in the UK. I happen to speak English in my first language. You're actually not quite true either, but let's not discuss that. It doesn't matter whether I'm speaking in Sisutu or IsiZulu. The concept is there. It's not a language issue. It's a conceptual issue. So I'm saying, why leave it hanging in the air?
Please.
Right, fine. Okay, done. Now the next thing then, finally. Momo wants to reply to Floyd, and Floyd's not here. Yeah, he's gone. So we'll find some other time. Right. Now, can you congratulate the chairperson on managing the committee and saving us despite a horrific committee members? The committee chair, can you move that, please? I'd like to move in a second.
Chairman,
the committee chairperson.
The Democratic Alliance wishes to reserve its position.
Even before I move a motion of confidence in myself, Linda. Okay. Right. Is there any constitutional or legal problem with a chairperson moving a motion of confidence in itself? You don't have to answer right now. Look it up. Right. So I am suggesting, Tandy, we want it carefully. We say, this committee acknowledges the committee chairperson has saved us 17